Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes, Huck.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Tonight on the big program, we're going to be talking with our good friend Erwin Aronson about the big debutante ball the other night and what direction our new governor is going to take us. Some other news around the country as well. Also, Frank Metulli, he's the owner of EqualHumanCitizen.com. We're going to be talking about the Citizens United case, you know, with the anniversary of Citizens United being yesterday. I'm going to talk a little bit about him with how we move forward, what we need to do, how we need to take the message back. And also Craig Hallman, government affairs lobbyist, public citizen. He's going to be talking also about Citizens United because I think it's a big, big story. And really, it's what our country is going to have to wrestle with if we're going to have any reasonable chance of having people like you and I run for political office. The money in this system is corrupting from the inside out, and we need to do something to take that back. So it'll be interesting to talk about that. Also, Eric Bailey, he's another one of these folks who found out he had Chinese-made drywall in his house, and like the woman we talked to last night, all the negative side effects that come along with that. So it'll be interesting to talk to him as well. Your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Today is the day JFK made his ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country speech. And I have to look what's going on in the House. I just simply see a bunch of special interests funded by multinational corporations and big moneyed, deep pocketed interests having their will done. You know, I look at this repeal of the health care law in the House, and I really thought, you know, and as I watched C-SPAN today, I really thought the Republicans would have a plan. They've been talking for, well, 2 years about killing this health care bill. 2 years they've been planning on killing it. So you would think in that time that they would have devised maybe an idea of their own. But no, that's not what they did. Now they're voting. They voted today to decide what they're going to do. Well, let's set up committees and let's hold hearings and let's go back to the beginning. Does that make any sense to you? I mean, you go into any restaurant, you talk to anybody on the street, they've got ideas on how we fix this healthcare mess. And they look at the law that's in place now, and there are a couple of things that they don't like. There are a couple of things they like. That's where, for me, it was to begin. Maybe go, well, what don't you like about the bill? All Republicans say it's everything. Don't like anything about it. Well, except the fact that kids get to stay on their parents' insurance, the fact that we're going to end pre-existing conditions, the fact that we're going to end rescission, the fact that seniors are going to close the donut hole. And they could go down the list of all the things they like and go, well, why not keep that stuff and change some of the things you don't like? Well, we hate everything. And then what I love is we're going to repeal this and we're going to replace it. with common sense. And I'm like, oh boy, I'm going to feel so much better knowing that my insurance is common sense. So that when I'm lying on the ground having a heart attack going, common sense will save me. I mean, really, come on. And, you know, I listened to Eric Cantor talk today. And he actually said that he was there and the other Republicans that were there to clean up the spending mess from the last Congress. Well, what about the one before and the one before and the one before and the one before? The one that you guys controlled. The last Congress had to dig out a massive hole. A massive hole. How soon we forget. And you know this whole healthcare thing to me. We've been fighting this now. Think about how historic it is that we have a healthcare bill. Even if the Republicans want to repeal it, and even if they're going to starve it by denying funding for it. Think about how historic it is. Teddy Roosevelt started pushing for a national healthcare plan over 100 years ago. Truman wanted one. He couldn't do it here, so what did he do? He went to Europe and made sure all those folks had it. Kennedy fought for it. And I thought, I remembered the speech Kennedy gave in Madison Square Garden, and I wanted to play a couple of clips from that because I think it's important, especially on this day of his famous speech, to maybe hear some other things. Here's what he said about Europe.
In England, the entire cost of medicine for people of all ages, all of it, doctors, the choice of doctors, hospitals, from the time you're born to the time you die, are included in a government program. But what we're talking about is entirely different. And I hope that while he's here, he and Dr. Spock and others who have joined us will come to see what we're trying to do. The fact of the matter is that what we are now talking about doing, most of the countries of Europe did years ago. The British did it 30 years ago.
And, you know, as I listen to that, and again, you know, the Republicans again have again twisted it and said, oh, well, we want what they have over there. And while I do, this isn't what we got. Had nothing to do with this bill. But again, it's about changing the language. It's about completely changing the frame. Kennedy went on to say this.
We are behind every country pretty nearly in Europe in this matter of medical care for our citizens. And then those who say that this should be left to private effort. In those hospitals in New Jersey where the doctors said they wouldn't treat anyone who paid their hospital bills through Social Security, those hospitals and every other new hospital, the American people, all of us, contribute one half, one or two-thirds for every new hospital, the national government. We pay 55% of all the research done. We help young men become doctors.
And that was at the beginning. By the 60s, we were contributing far more to the building of hospitals. We were contributing far more to research and development. We did that. We the taxpayers. We the people. Our system. And it was doing great. Until Reagan came along and this whole privatization rant. Kennedy finished up with something that I think is most important.
We are concerned with the progress of this country. And those who say that what we are now talking about spoils our great pioneer heritage should remember that the West was settled with two great actions by the national government. One, in President Lincoln's administration, when he gave a homestead to everyone who went West, and in 1862 he set aside government property to build our land-grant colleges. This cooperation between an alert and progressive citizen and a progressive government is what has made this country great. And we shall continue as long as we have the opportunity to do so.
You know, it's coming back to this idea of public investment. You and I saying collectively we want these things. And this is what I've been saying from the beginning, Jake, that I want this investment. I think all of us want to have this kind of investment so that we're not like some of the folks that we've heard going through these stories, people getting sick, losing their homes, people getting sick, ending up homeless. This is what the Republicans want to take away from people, the ability not to go bankrupt, the ability not to be homeless, the ability to get care. It's It's mean-spirited.
Well, when Kennedy talks about that, what he's talking about is the future of the country. He's talking about the common good, and we've gotten away from that. And when anybody stands up and talks about the common good and the commonality we all have, and the future of this country involves the government, they demonize it. Call it socialism. Some of the right-wing crazies even call it communism. And somehow, some of the American people, probably out of fear and probably out of the fact that maybe they don't have a job and they're fearful of the future, have bought into it. If I can comment on some of the comments of the Republicans, I mean, I literally heard your girlfriend again call health care reform socialized medicine. I mean, nothing could be further from the truth. This is no way socialized medicine. It's merely an improvement. Also, I also heard a congressman, believe it or not, Rick, say that this, and he has his numbers a little bit skewed. He said, you know, this health care reform is going to cost the Treasury $230 billion. Well, no, not really. It's going to save the taxpayers. It's going to deduct from our deficit $230 million in the first 10 years. So they're demagoguing it. They're just throwing facts. They're trying to demonize it. They're doing everything they can to stop this. And I think in their heart of hearts, they know that they're not going to be able to do it, Rick. Thanks to the Senate.
And my last Kennedy clip, and this is what I hope for, really honestly and truthfully.
And what we're talking about here is true in a variety of other ways. All the great revolutionary movements of the Franklin Roosevelt administration in the 30s we now take for granted. But I refuse to see us live on the accomplishments of another generation. I refuse to see this country and all of us shrink from these struggles, which are our responsibility in our time, because what we are now talking about in our children's day would seem to be the ordinary business of government.
And, you know, that's the hope in it for me, that we're going to see health care in my children's day, when they're my age, as something that is just, it is what it is.
You know,
like we look at Social Security now. It's important. And, you know, and again, you know, I love the way he says, look, you know, we're not going to live off of another generation. We're not going to live off of those folks. And I'm going to tell you, we haven't done anything since Kennedy. We're still living off the investment that he was talking about. And that's what bothers me.
All those progressive things he did, all the things that he did to make this country a better place for all of us. To me, he was kind of a modern day FDR. And yet, this concept that when you're progressive and you talk about things that Kennedy talked about, the Republicans try to insinuate, well, that's socialism and you're going to break the bank. Well, that doesn't really coincide with history. Kennedy favored a balanced budget and did pretty well.
Yeah. So here's my angry part. I'm angry with Democrat from New York, Anthony Weiner. I'm angry with Anthony because he was irresponsible. Irresponsible in promoting a drinking game. He is promoting people, encouraging folks to take a shot every time a Republican lies.
And I did.
Granted, he did encourage folks to get a designated driver, so you got to give him a little slack, because they'd be taking a lot of shots. But I'm still angry. It's just not the right message. How many college kids are going to flunk out of college now because of Anthony Weiner and his little drinking game saying every time a Republican lies, take a shot? We're going to have a whole society full of people slobbering drunk. But he knows the game's rigged. He knows it. And he knows how much drinking is going to be going on, especially now that the Republicans want to take away $1,000 per student in the Pell Grant. So maybe when those kids flunk out, they won't have to worry about it. They won't have to worry about it because they were going to be kicked out anyway because they didn't have the money. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back with our good friend Irwin Aronson, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. The Supreme Court ruled on Wednesday that background checks of scientists and other government contract workers do not violate constitutional privacy rights. After the September 11, 2001 attacks, background checks were extended to companies and universities that play a role in projects funded by the government. The court overturned a previous ruling by the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals that said the background checks of contractors were a violation of privacy. Justice Samuel Alito wrote on behalf of the court that the government has wide latitude when it deals with employees, and that includes contract workers. However, Scalia and Justice Clarence Thomas went further by writing a concurring opinion suggesting informational privacy is a right that does not exist. Scalia went on to challenge the concept of informational privacy rights, calling the idea farcical. He wrote that there is no right deeply rooted in our history and tradition that bars the government from ensuring that the Hubble telescope is not used by recovering drug addicts. The case before the Supreme Court was brought by 28 veteran scientists and researchers at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in California. Since August 2009, workers have been in negotiations with a number of hotels in San Francisco. One of those hotels is San Francisco's Grand Hyatt. The workers, represented by Unite Here Local 2, on Tuesday, gathered to let their concerns be known. The hotel has been the focus of strike action and boycotts, with the union charging that Hyatt hasn't bargained in good faith while trying to reach a fair contract. The two sides are scheduled to meet again on February 1st as negotiations head into the 16th month. The union has also launched a boycott against Hilton Hotels in San Francisco. Some of the issues the workers are working toward in negotiations with the hotels are a fair pension, affordable health care, and reasonable workloads. Greensboro, North Carolina received tough employment news on Wednesday when American Express announced it would be shuttering a service center. The end result of the closure will impact 1,900 workers. American Express Senior Vice President Bob Geringer tried to put a positive spin on the closure in a memo to employees. He wrote, "We have 1,900 people who are affected by this decision, and therefore we have 1,900 possibilities. Many of the workers could end up being transferred to other U.S. service centers or possibly work from home."
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Standing tall against a multinational corporate agenda. The Rick Smith Show.
All the things you want are real. You have you to complete, and there is no deal.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Last year, about this time, in the state of Utah, State Senator Chris Butters proposed to end the senior year of high school so that the state could chip away at their $700 million shortfall. When that was met with a resounding no, he decided to try and make senior year optional. Now you look at Texas, they're faced with a $27 billion shortfall, and you've got one of the Dallas's superintendent saying that they should eliminate the 12th grade, claiming the senior year is the most wasted year of your education. Maybe Texas should try vouchers. There's another dumb idea. Amazing stuff. I got Irwin Aronson on the phone. Irwin, welcome to the program.
Hey, good to be here. How you doing, Fred?
I'm good. I wanted to ask you before we get into everything else, how was the big debutante ball, the coming out party for our new governor?
Well, Super Tom came out and danced the night away to a crowd of the party faithful and me. It was an intriguing sight. I was probably the chair of the liberal corner, and it, a small corner indeed it was, but I had a chance to be at all places celebrating this inaugural ball at the farm show, and given the slop that these hogs seem to be thrown around, the farm show was an apt place to be.
That's a perfect way of putting it. So now we move forward, and I see Senate Bill 1. From what I understand, Senate Bill 1 is going to be the vouchers, going after education. And help me here, because as I understand this, handing out these vouchers means that someone's going to have to do it, thus another government bureaucracy, according to the right, called the Educational Choice Board, thus bigger government. Isn't this exactly what the Republicans ran against?
Well, maybe you can explain it. I can't. The first problem we have is that you described this as us moving forward. This is anything but moving forward. This is a method by which the proponents of this so-called voucher legislation will confiscate money from the taxpayers and place it in the hands of the people who operate exclusive private schools for the wealthy. So instead of Main Street schools, we're going to have Wall Street schools, but just like the taxpayers a couple of years ago were asked to bail out Wall Street, this time we're going to pay for Wall Street schools. And amazingly enough, not only is it setting up a government bureaucracy brought to you by the people who are going to take government off our backs, and apparently they're going to put government off our backs and right in our pockets, but it's a bureaucracy that is uniquely and especially cynical, because it takes money away from the one thing that assures the potential for equality and fairness in the democracy, and that is the idea of people, no matter where they come from, having their children have access to a good quality education. So we're going to stop having that, because we're going to take money out of the schools that working folks get to send their children to, and we're going to put it in the hands of the Wall Street school. So I can't figure it out. Maybe somebody wiser than me can.
But Irwin, these, and we're a little wrong in our language. They're not vouchers anymore. They're opportunity scholarships. And they're going to help those inner city kids like you and I, when we were children, going to help us. Why, how can we possibly be against that?
Well, if it did that, how could we be against it? But it doesn't do that. What it does is it takes the tuition charge at a private snooty school and lays off a portion of it onto the public. So if we have a school that's charging $15,000 a year to send junior to high school, and only rich people get to send their juniors to the $15,000 a year high school, and the local school district is assaulted so that the school district has to pay $5,000 or $6,000 of junior's tuition, those inner city urban kids who are being denied a good quality education now will still not have a chance to go to junior's Wall Street school, because they can't come up with the other $9,000 or $10,000 a year to cover the tuition. So it just is going to cut the bill for the rich people while taking money away from the typical schools that our children get to go to make their education even worse, because the money for which they are desperate will be split up yet one more way, and at the same time stranding the cost. And everybody needs to remember that when we start taking kids out of the schools, it doesn't diminish the cost of our existing schools, because the buildings are still there. The heat still needs to be on in the winter, and the water still needs to run, and the place needs to be cleaned, and the snow needs to be shoveled, and the grass needs to be cut. All of those basic overhead costs will still remain, and it's not as if 20 kids from the third grade all move out of one school at one time. We have one child here and one child there, so there are no fewer teachers, no fewer administrators, no fewer snowflakes, no smaller heating bills. But there are fewer dollars that have to be spread around those who are left.
For me, you know, when I look at this, Irwin, for me, it takes me back to the idea when I was a kid, when they were trying to desegregate the schools, and they were doing the busing to make sure everybody had their right mix. Me, I see this as going back to very strict segregated type schools based on religion or you know where you live, and this whole idea of charter schools to me again puts in my mind that we're going to see a lot of religious based schools propping up, and we're going to be a very segregated society along those lines.
Well, it is segregation 21st century style. That's precisely what it is. I think you're hitting the nail on the head. The difference is, of course, in the southern United States and even here in the north of the 1950s, segregation happened because people had some deep-rooted philosophical, social basis for it, however wrong-headed, however misguided. Now we're having a whole new deal. It's going to be a rearrangement and a reallocation of educational access, not based on anything so lofty as social values, however wrongheaded they may have been. This is all now about money. We are going to be a society of statutorily imposed reverse Robin Hood. We're going to steal from the poor and give to the rich. And rich kids will get an education, and the rest of us will be lacking. And pretty soon we will have ingrained yet one more time in the history of this country a world of the haves and the have-nots. And the have-nots this time will be condemned not to a simple situation in which they have less. They'll be condemned to a situation in which they have been denied access to the fundamental things upon which this country was built. Because once we no longer have access for all to a high-quality, public, free education, what we have is a group of people who can participate in our democracy and a very much larger group who are denied really the ability to participate in that democracy because they don't have the educational underpinning that allow them to be competent, quality, educated voters, educated consumers. And it won't be long before we're back to the company town and the company store. And maybe, just maybe, if we hit this right, the way these people advocate, we will be like China, we will be like India, we will be like Central America, where the children who go to school really do well, and the rest of us won't even have to bother.
Yep, just go right to the fields.
That's correct.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Erwin Ahrens, our good friend and attorney. If you've got a question for Erwin, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Another question I wanted to bring up, the idea that the state stores are going to solve all of our budget woes. You know, I've heard this a couple of times, and I think the mean has been pushed out there that by selling off the wine and spirit shop, selling off this asset, somehow this one single silver bullet is going to solve all of our problems and make everything fine.
Right, and there is the Santa Claus too, and I believe in the tooth fairy. The reality is that this is just one more piece of, forgive the pun, old wine in a new bottle. They've been trying to steal this very successful business in which we taxpayers are all shareholders and beneficiaries, one that apparently with ease and clarity raises $500 million a year, $500 million in taxes that we would otherwise have to pay. And the whole idea is to liberate us from the burden of being shareholders in this very successful business and pass it along instead to private enterprise, just like we've successfully done in so many other businesses. You know, Rick, the state system, Liquor Control Board and the wine and spirit shops that it operates are one of the few things that the state does that makes money, and it makes money for the benefit of all. Therefore, obviously, we should get rid of it. But when you sit down and you do the math, in order to generate the money that they're suggesting we will generate, that is, they're talking about generating $2 billion, that's with a B, billion dollars from the sale of the state wine and spirit shop system. What we would have to do is get an average of $50 million for each and every existing store.
That's not going to happen.
How could it possibly happen? If a store is worth $50 million in Center City, Philadelphia, what's it worth in Kerwinsville, Pennsylvania? Real world is our system is so good that it assures that people in Kerwinsville, people in Knox, Pennsylvania, people in Shamokin and Sunbury, in New Bloomfield and Perry County, and in Harrisburg, and in downtown Pittsburgh, and upstate in Erie, and downstate in Upper Darby, all have access to exactly the same products at exactly the same price on exactly the same days of the week.
Well, that's the problem. Right there's the problem, Irwin.
Yeah.
You're giving people the exact same thing. They don't like that. They want to be able to go to all those small places that you named and stick it to those people because they're the only game in town.
Well, I don't think they'll stick it to those people. I think that what will happen really is that those people won't have access. Instead of being within 10 or 15 minutes of a wine and spirit shop, some of them will end up being 2 hours away. You know, I'll tell you, it strikes me as just amazing. If I were to go to any governor, Democrat, Republican, new, old, even Tom Corbett, and say, Governor, I want to start a business in Pennsylvania. It's going to employ 3,000 or more people in family-sustaining jobs with family-sustaining benefits. It's going to operate in every community in the state of Pennsylvania. It will be the single and only retail business that gives the state of Pennsylvania a fair count on the collection of the sales tax. It will be a business that carries out every social purpose that anybody has ever articulated about the product itself. And it will assure that virtually no underage consumer gets access. It will pretty much assure that there are crime-free retail locations in as far-reaching places as Erie to Philadelphia, Duncannon to Scranton to Harrisburg to Pittsburgh to Little Washington. And I guarantee as well, Governor, that we're going to deliver $500 million cash dollars to your treasury every year. Every single governor would respond by saying, Irwin, how much do you need?
Yep.
And so instead of that, we're going to take what we have, and we're going to pick it apart, strip it to the skeleton, and pass it out to the Rite Aids and the 7-Elevens of the world. And we're going to put some pimply-faced kid behind the counter and tell him that his rate of pay is going to be based on how much he sells of the three different brands of three different bottles of wine that they're going to have in the Rite Aid store. And do you think that kid and the manager of that store, who is also getting a commission, there's going to be all that worried about whether or not it's sold to somebody who's drunk or whether or not it's sold to somebody who's underage? And do you think we're going to go through a weekend where the Saturday night special holdups aren't going to take place at the Rite Aid shops and the 7-Elevens and the gas stations that would be selling wine? And, oh, yeah, by the way, in order to get that $2 billion instead of having 640 stores across the state like we have now, we'll have to have something in the on the order of 1,800 to 2,000 stores because that's the only way they're going to raise the $2 billion. And as soon as we increase the number of stores, the cost per store is going to go down. It ain't going to go up. We all learned about supply and demand, at least those of us who have had access to a good quality public education that will be being denied to the next generation because of the vouchers. And we know what this means. So, you know, kiss it goodbye. The war is on, and it is a war that is engaged by the multi-rich and against the multitudes. And we either are going to fight this through and win, or we are going to be blown back just as if we had been hit by a nuclear bomb.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw the story just before Christmas last year. In Maryland, they sent the police to do an undercover sting in 19 stores there in Fredericks, Maryland. Fredericksburg, I think it is there. 14 of 19 stores sold to underage kids.
Well, now there's a surprise for you. But that was okay because of the 14 stores that sold to underage kids where somebody got a commission for doing so. There were the other five stores at least one of which got knocked off on Saturday night by somebody with a gun. So let's get real. Let's get serious. The system ain't broke. Therefore, why would we want this fixed for it?
Ideology, pure and simple.
No, it's not ideology, buddy. That's too easy. I would respect ideology. This is all about greed. This is stealing from the poor and giving to the rich.
Well, as I believe, greed is an ideology. It's a religion. It's their faith. It's their life's calling.
Well, it may be their life's calling, but what it is really is this. It's not so lofty a purpose as a religion. It is far less virtuous and far more bound up in a grotesque sense of entitlement where it's, I got mine, and I have a right to get more, and you get the heck out of my way.
So it will be an interesting couple of months, I think.
It will be a very interesting couple of months, and I think you're right. This so-called Senate Bill 1, this school voucherless program, is going to be the first effort, because if they get away with it and ramrod it through, they will be emboldened to pursue all manner of other activities, whether it's stripping public employees of the pensions they have earned, or stripping construction workers of the access to a fair and decent wage when they work on projects in their local communities, to the decimation of the wine and spirit shop system, to selling off our roads and our streets, to who knows what their greedy imaginations will run with them to what place we know not.
Like I've been saying, it's going to be an auction, and at fire sale prices as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely at fire sale prices.
Irwin, always great to talk to you. I appreciate you coming on the program. We look forward to talking to you again next week.
Good to be here, and always good to hear your voice. And be well, take care, and don't give up the fight, because we got a lot of fighting left, buddy.
And that's why we're here. Thanks so much, Irwin.
You bet.
You know, and that's the thing. The mastery, I think, that the Republicans have done, they put a Democrat out ahead of this. We got Hardy Williams gonna head up SB1, so that ought to be interesting. We'll take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come.
Show, changing America for the better.
Chances are that an art museum, symphony hall, university building, or other public edifice in your area is emblazoned with the name of some prominent rich man. His name is up there in shiny brass, we're told, because he's a model citizen for all to emulate. Of course, we know that his name is there only because he's richer than Zeus and gave a bale of money to get the institution to immortalize him in brick and brass. And don't even ask what he did to get so rich. The real citizens, in my view, are not those who are publicly glorified, but regular folks across our land who rise up against greed and injustice, usually fighting with no public acclaim. Ironically, they're often battling injustices perpetrated by the very same rich men whose names are so garishly splashed across our public buildings. Sadly, we recently lost one model citizen with the death of Judy Bonds, a wonderfully spirited woman from Marfork Holler down in the coal fields of West Virginia. Forced out of her ancestral home a decade ago by the profiteering barons of mountaintop strip mining, Judy became the baron's worst nightmare. An enraged, fearless, knowledgeable, determined, and eloquent grassroots activist. From the hollers of Appalachia to the halls of Congress, from town meetings to university lecture halls, this tireless champion of environmental justice took Appalachia's dirty secret, the grotesque destruction that coal company greed is wreaking on the mountains, streams, and people there, into the national spotlight. Passionate, funny, and inspiring, Bonds was known as the Hillbilly Moses, rallying local coalitions to battle the greed and galvanizing a national movement to stop the ravages of mountaintop removal. This is Jim Hightower saying, Judy's gone, but her spirit lives on in the movement that she built. To connect with it, go to Coal River Mountain Watch at crmw.net.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out. HightowerLowdown.com.
Who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters? Rick Smith.
The rich pay too much taxes. The poor get way too much. Instead of schools, build prisons and lock the children up. We won't believe those lies again.
Yes, he is, and he takes vouchers. I bet you didn't know that. I bet you didn't know that God took vouchers. And in fact, I saw an interesting ad online today that Jesus hates Obama. In fact, JesusHatesObama.com is the website. Evidently, Fox News has, or the Fox Channel has denied access to the commercial, I guess during the Super Bowl, or they've banned this commercial. Which is kind of funny. There's two bobbleheads. There's a there's like a dashboard Jesus next to a bobblehead Obama, and they're just kind of looking at each other, and Obama falls into a fish tank. Boy, that's funny. Not really. Wasn't funny at all, but JesusHatesObama.com. Good religious stuff. I'll bet you that's the kind of stuff they'll do with those charter schools. Anyway, big news for me today happened in South Carolina. I don't know if you heard this, Jake, but Nikki Haley, the new governor down there in South Carolina, which I got to be honest, that would make a good porno name. I mean, that's a hot name, Nikki Haley. I just think it is. I get an image in my mind. Anyway, she's suing the union, the International Association of Machinists. She's suing them so that they cannot organize the Boeing workers. I mean, it's amazing. she's saying that the state is not going to allow unions to organize Boeing. So the union's suing. I'm sorry, she's not suing the union. The union's suing her because she has come out and said, look, we're going to use the power of the state to block the right of workers to join and form a union. To me, that is amazing.
I think there's a little thing called the National Labor Relations Act.
Well, there's a whole bunch of stuff. But, you know, the gall, the audacity, the amazing part of this is that without any fear of recourse, she has come out and said that, you know, we're gonna do everything we can do to make sure that those workers are union free. And thus meaning working for poor wages and no benefits and in pretty bad conditions. You know, the way it's supposed to be. And I'm just mind blown. And we're going to get somebody from the machinists, I think, here in the next couple of days to talk about this, because I think this is huge. The fact that a state government is working against their workers. I mean, look, I don't even think Tom Corbett is that bad. I mean, I don't think he would even, well, I don't think it would enter his mind, but I really don't think that even he would go that far. Not his lieutenant governor, that Cawley. I do think he would.
She's part of the new generation around the country. You see these young yuppies, well-educated. It's a new era for them. They are pushing the envelope.
Amazing, amazing stuff. Another worker story, the BNSF Railroad. One of their workers has filed a claim saying that he was demoted based on his not wanting to go to prayer meetings that his supervisor was holding. So you got this situation where the boss wants to hold prayer meetings and wants to speak the good word, wants to tell you all about Jesus, hands you out some pamphlets, asks you for donations. And yes, sir, he wants you to get down on your knees and tell the good and praise the good book. But all you want to do is go to work. All you want to do is support your family. And this guy, I mean, to me, that's a hostile work environment. You know, look, I've got my faith. Other people have theirs. And that's where it should end, at the workplace. And again, this goes back to how poor our labor laws are. This guy's a supervisor at this BNSF railroad. And his boss, because everybody has a boss, is doing this proselytizing, you know, preaching the good word, handing out books, telling people, if you're a married couple and you don't have children, you're a sinner. And I go, wait a minute. I just want to go to work. So he complains, right? He says, look, I don't want to do this. I don't want to get their handwritten material. I don't want to pray with them. I don't want to do any of this stuff. I want to do my job. So they transfer him a couple hundred miles away, and they demote him. And then on top of it, evidently this guy had taken some family leave. And I don't know what the problem was. The article doesn't say. I'm sure it's got to be something very personal, very private. But then all the new workers, his new coworkers, they all know about it. And it's got to be something really, really private. Because, you know, if you got your coworkers busting your shoes over it, it's got to be something really bad. Again, but, you know, it goes back down to this, do you have any privacy? So for me, it highlights a couple of things. One, the fact that your employer can force you to do just about anything, I guess, without fear of reprisal or recourse. Like get down on your knees and pray to the good book, which I'm not against, but just don't make me do it in front of other people. No?
It's kind of, the irony is, it's kind of like a Christian Al-Qaeda in a sense.
Well, you said it. I agree with it.
I don't know how else to say it. I mean, your job depends on your religion.
You're right.
Come on, I thought we were fighting that overseas.
Yeah, well, here, evidently, at this RS railroad, you got to preach to the good book. But I guess what it shows is how weak our laws are, that you can't be protected from this stuff. You can't just go and do your job. And the other part of this, it tells me, you know what? Time for reform. We need to have some laws passed, some things to protect. You know, I'm all in favor of you having your little prayers. You know, when I was working, we had some guys who, because we all shared trucks, we had guys who, you know, would leave their little books all over the dashboard and all over the place so that you'd have to either, you know, look at them or throw them out. I just left them for the next guy because, you know, somebody might want it. That's okay. But, yeah, you had those guys, they'd leave their CDs and their cassettes. And, but where do these people get all this money? If you've got all this money to waste, maybe we should be asking you to contribute some to society, because there's a lot of hungry people out there. You know, if you want to do the good work, if you want to preach the good word, maybe do so with a good deed instead of a bizarre pamphlet with weird pictures on it. And the final part of this for me is I think as Bill George always said, it's union time. Because you should have a voice on the job without fear of reprisal, without fear of being demoted and sent hundreds of miles away. Honestly and truthfully, that's what it's for me. We're going to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Back after this.
I'm with you now.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
I'm David Thillman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. Chances are you may never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, inspecting an elevator, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. www.afscme.com or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Commanding the super rich to pay their fair share for once. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Last night we talked about fake news on Fox being booted off its perch as the most trusted news on television. And here is another in a long reasons of why. The other day, this Martha McCallum, one of the bubbleheads over there at fake news on Fox, she made some really bizarre statement that it was not customary for the EPA to regulate automakers. So it's not customary for them to do any updating of regulations. And, you know, I'm going, really? So according to fake news, the EPA has no business regulating the auto industry, which is kind of interesting since that's exactly what they've been doing since the EPA started. And amazingly, the other part that caught me is George Pataki was on the show. And he just kept right on rambling on as if she was right on the money. Oh, yeah. The Obama environmental policies are horrible. Now, right from the EPA website. This is right from their website. Starting in the early 1970s, EPA has set national standards that have considerably reduced emissions of carbon monoxide, CO, and other pollutants from motor vehicles, including tailpipe emissions, motor vehicle technologies, and clean fuel programs. That's the EPA's website. The Clean Air Act was amended for the explicit purpose of tightening pollution standards for emissions for autos and trucks. So I don't know where she's getting this stuff. And again, it's this, how the right just loves to throw this stuff out there. Oh, well, it wasn't supposed to do that. And it's just, you know, reach behind and pull out a good one. And what scares me is the people watching that, they just bobblehead it along. Oh, yeah, I agree. Uh-huh. Yep.
Why should that surprise you? I mean, the first segment, I mentioned, you know, somebody in the halls of Congress on the day of the vote stood up there, barefaced, lied, said this bill is going to cost the Treasury $230 billion the first 10 years.
Did you drink?
No.
Did you
drink? No, no. It's not going to, it's going to save $230 billion because of the efficiencies within the system, because of the changes. But other than MSNBC, who called them on it? I didn't see anybody call them on it. There they are in the halls of Congress saying something which is absolutely has no no truth to it. And yet,
I mean, if you watch that debate the last two days, it was really more just campaigning. That's all they did was campaign. They think it's a perpetual campaign for them. They offered no solutions. And tomorrow, I guess, they're supposed to be coming out with some grand cut. How they're going to come up with $2.5 trillion, and we'll see. We'll take a look at that. I'm sure it's cuts to things that we, the working people, can use. I can't wait to read that. But here again, you know, if you watched it today, you're just absolutely amazed that we pay these people to do this stuff. I'm starting to get on the anti-government bandwagon. I'm looking at these Republicans and it was like we could have just had one guy stand up there and say all the things. Just have the one guy put out the whole message because the redundancy was boring. I end up having to turn it off. And I like C-SPAN. But, again, no solutions, just pointing out problems. That's why we have Republicans around. Anyway, today in history, back in 1920, the ACLU was founded, the American Civil Liberties Union. I'm sure our conservative friends are very happy about that. And to be honest with you, there are times that even the ACLU angers me, which tells me that they're doing a good job. When everybody's angry at them, I think they're doing something right. So good for them. Happy birthday to them. Also, back today in 1981, something happened. Do you know what it was?
1981.
The second Ronald Reagan's hand touched the Bible and took the oath of office. What happened? The hostages were released from Tehran. And as we
just,
all know.
Just accidentally.
Oh, yeah.
Just one of those. Just, you know, God let them open.
You know,
God released them, right?
It's, you know, I had someone tell me that, you know, when someone puts a gun to your forehead, all your body bodily fluids just flow right out of you, and you mess your shorts. So what I'm thinking, as soon as Ronald Reagan's hand touched the Bible, the whole country of Iran had a mass exodus, if you know what I'm saying. And they ruined their shorts. So that's why, you know, that's why I was, not that they were checking their watch going, can we let these people go already? I want to go watch American Idol. Or whatever dumb TV show was on back then. Because we're now hearing reports years later that they held those hostages for several extra months. They wanted to get rid of them. They wanted out of it. But somehow, they just held on. But anyway, today back in 1981, the 444-day Iran hostage crisis came to an end. And good. Good, good, good. You know, I remember back to that when I was just a kid at the time, and I remember even among my school peers, because I was seventh grade back then, sixth, seventh grade. I remember my school friends thirsting to go to war with them because that's what their parents were telling them, and just this whole run up and this whole fervor of that time. It's amazing to me that we stayed out of that.
I remember watching it. It used to be 11:30 after the national news were on for half an hour. 11:30, 27. The ABC network would have a show, and it would say Hostage Day 61, and they would give highlights for every day, a half an hour, and they would show the hostages being led around blindfolded, and it did evoke anger in the American people, and rightfully so. I mean, those were innocent people over there, and they suffered. They suffered a long time. The question I have, Rick, I wonder what the Iranians were given for doing that little favor for Ronald Reagan.
Well, we know what they were given. They were given parts, lots of parts, because if you remember, at the time, they were involved in some skirmishes there as well. So they were given...
Well, they were still fighting with Iraq at that time.
Yeah, they were given parts.
In a brutal war, by the way.
Yep. Brutal, you know, they were brutal. Given all of, you know, on one hand, you got them openly funding one side while in the other way doing it in the back door. A very Republican thing to do. Amazing stuff. But, you know, again, I still remember that, and it's vivid in my memory, which is why, you know, you sometimes go back and you think about things that influenced your thought process. And that did. That time really influenced my thinking quite a bit. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break right here. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the Citizens United stuff. Where we go from here, what are the answers? And I got a guest coming up, Frank Matulli, equalhumancitizen.com is the website. We'll put a link up on our site at thericksmithshow.com in case you want to check that out. But this ought to be interesting because the idea is that on the state level, we should be going after them, I think, and making corporations not people, because I seriously don't believe that corporations are people. We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this.
In an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. The Supreme Court ruled on Wednesday that background checks of scientists and other government contract workers do not violate constitutional privacy rights. after the September 11, 2001 attacks. Background checks were extended to companies and universities that play a role in projects funded by the government. The court overturned a previous ruling by the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals that said the background checks of contractors were a violation of privacy. Justice Samuel Alito wrote on behalf of the court that the government has wide latitude when it deals with employees, and that includes contract workers. However, Scalia and Justice Clarence Thomas went further by writing a concurring opinion suggesting informational privacy is a right that does not exist. Scalia went on to challenge the concept of informational privacy rights, calling the idea farcical. He wrote that there is no right deeply rooted in our history and tradition that bars the government from ensuring that the Hubble telescope is not used by recovering drug addicts. The case before the Supreme Court was brought by 28 veteran scientists and researchers in NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in California. Since August 2009, workers have been in negotiations with a number of hotels in San Francisco. One of those hotels is San Francisco's Grand Hyatt. The workers, represented by Unite Here Local 2, on Tuesday, gathered to let their concerns be known. The hotel has been the focus of strike action and boycotts, with the union charging that Hyatt hasn't bargained in good faith while trying to reach a fair contract. The two sides are scheduled to meet again on February 1st as negotiations head into the 16th month. The union has also launched a boycott against Hilton Hotels in San Francisco. Some of the issues the workers are working toward in negotiations with the hotels are a fair pension, affordable health care, and reasonable workloads. Greensboro, North Carolina, received tough employment news on Wednesday when American Express announced it would be shuttering a service center. The end result of the closure will impact 1,900 workers. American Express Senior Vice President Bob Geringer tried to put a positive spin on the closure in a memo to employees. He wrote, "We have 1,900 people who are affected by this decision, and therefore we have 1,900 possibilities. Many of the workers could end up being transferred to other U.S. service centers or possibly work from home."
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
Somebody's watching you, you like it. Somebody's watching you, you care.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, right there at the website, you can download our podcast. I want to throw a shout-out to all of our podcast friends. Again, if you want to email me, also Rick at thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. In fact, my next guest is someone who emailed me recently and said, "Hey, you know what? We need to begin to take our country back, and the way we need to do that is to overthrow the corporations and say that they're not people." And I agree. I got Frank Metulli on the phone. Frank, welcome to the program.
How you doing? My phone is not the best in the world. I'm on a cell phone, so.
All right. The website, equalhumancitizen.org. Check it out. We'll get a link over at our site at thericksmithshow.com. So tell me, Frank, what do we do?
I'm unemployed. I'm actually own a small corporation, transportation, went out of business here in the last couple of years, and I really want to get into politics.
Yeah,
and,
what do we do to begin to take the country back?
Okay, starts out the Declaration of Independence. Thomas Jefferson wrote that, and then he left. And then 11 years later, government servants, like the politicians we have in Washington, D.C. right now, wrote the Constitution. And the Declaration of Independence actually inspired everybody to go to war. And then once we've gone to war, the government servants wrote the Constitution in a way Jefferson actually called it an artful maneuver. and said that we've been duped and deceived. And once I got research on it, he says this over and over again. And if you look, the words in the that gives power in the Declaration of Independence, or in the Constitution, gives it to the three branches of government, and then the states, and then the people. But if you go to my website, I've actually researched, I've taken the words from the state constitutions, and they mirror the Declaration of Independence. In other words, the government servants took the words from the Declaration of Independence, and they never put it in the Constitution. So all this government of the people, by the people, and for the people was never written into the Constitution. It starts off with large words, we the people. But if you read the small print, they give the government servants all the power and we the people none. But if you go to my website and just go down and look at the list of look at the state constitutions, the words that are in there from the Declaration of Independence. It's overwhelmingly powerful. 49 states have almost identical language as the Declaration of Independence. And the U.S. Constitution has none of it in there. So basically, we've got a situation where we've got
let me stop you here, Frank, real quick.
Okay.
The Declaration of Independence was basically a war document.
It's
basically a declaration of war, if you will. The Constitution was set up on how we set up a rule of government. So can you see that they're two separate purposes?
It's a declaration of war. It's a divorce document from the British. It's not a legal document. But it puts forward a theory of government which inspired the people to go to war, because a lot of people didn't want to go to war. They were satisfied with British rule, like Canada or Australia.
Okay.
So we were inspired to go to war based on principles of self-government. Then,
and you're saying the Constitution doesn't say that?
The Constitution does not say that.
By we the people setting up our representatives, people who will represent us and do supposedly do our work, that's not of for and by.
If you go down to the bottom, just read the constitutions. Just go to the bottom of my website. I've got them all set up. They should be in alphabetical order now. Just go and look at the words that are in there. And they're right out of from the Declaration of Independence, they became part of our theory of law in every state in the Union. They were written into the constitutions in every state, but not into the federal.
Okay. If you want to check that out again, equalhumancitizen.com. We'll have a link over there.
.org. So yeah, .com will get you there too, but .org for sure.
All right. Well, we'll put a link to that over at our site at therickssmithshow.com. Just click on Frank Metalli's name. It'll take you right over there. So let me ask you this. What are you calling for people to do today? What's the grand plan?
Well, I've got several plans, but one on this, topic we're on tonight, it's just, it takes 34 state legislatures can actually do an amendment to the U.S. Constitution. We've got 49 that have already legislated and ratified the Constitution by the people. It should be a no-brainer that we could go in. And it basically says that all power is inherent in the people, it belongs to the people, and all benefits of the government should belong to the people. And that is different than what we're doing now. We wouldn't have a Citizens United thing if they had to answer to us. And we wouldn't be going to war with no-bid contracts, et cetera, if it was written in that they had to answer to us, but they don't.
Well, let me ask you, though, they do have to answer to us, don't they?
They
stood for election. Tell me
where it says that.
They stood for election just a couple of months ago, And sure, the American people voted for folks to go back to Congress, in many cases, to hand the power back to the people who created a lot of the messes. So I'm not getting the gist here.
Well, the corporations financed both candidates, didn't they?
That's true.
Pardon me?
That is true.
So they it's like a symbiotic relationship. Yeah, we are voting, but it's like we're a figurehead because we're voting for a candidate that's financed by corporations, and it doesn't matter which one you vote for. Corporations have they're actually representing corporations. They're not representing us.
I'll agree with you there. So what should we be doing? You say get the states to put an amendment in there ratify the Declaration of Independence in the Constitution?
Look at the state constitutions. All of the work is there. This is broken up into 50 parts or 49 parts already. What we need to do is organize. Just look at, if you look at the words in the state constitutions, we're 90% of the way there. All we have to do is amend those words, and they're powerful words. They're like, when I read the Declaration of Independence, it's inspiring. Well, when you read these states, it's powerful, and we the people are right on the edge of being able to take that away from corporations, and it's right there for our picking. And there's a lot of other things we can do, too.
All righty. Well, I encourage people to go over to equalhumancitizen.org. Again, we've got that linked at our site at thericksmithshow.com. Check out Frank's website, and I'm sure that they can email you if they want.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a contact on your website?
Yes, there is.
All righty. We'll make sure we get folks to take a look at that, and we'll see where you go from there. Frank, I appreciate your time, buddy.
Thank you, sir.
All righty. You know, and, bye-bye. You look at this, and, you know, I'm not quite sure I'm getting it. He explained his point. I still believe that the power of the people is vested in our institutions, and that we have the ability to throw people out, and that those folks are representatives of the people. Any ideas?
I thought what he was pushing was a change in the Constitution.
Well, he's pushing the change of the Constitution to change it away from, the powers being vested in Congress and in the President and the Supreme Court, breaking down the three-ring circus there, and just saying that the powers are in the hands of the people. Because if you look at the constitutions, and he's done some work here, all of the state constitutions that he has listed here do have all political power is inherent in the people. Government is instituted among the people. And I would say that Congress and the presidency, that represents the people.
The Constitution clearly says that the power vested in government comes from the people. It is all, in theory, it is on loan from the people.
Yeah, but an interesting discussion nonetheless. Let's take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people come to talk.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Chances are that an art museum, symphony hall, university building, or other public edifice in your area is emblazoned with the name of some prominent rich man. His name is up there in shiny brass, we're told, because he's a model citizen for all to emulate. Of course, we know that his name is there only because he's richer than Zeus and gave a bale of money to get the institution to immortalize him in brick and brass. And don't even ask what he did to get so rich. The real model citizens, in my view, are not those who are publicly glorified, but regular folks across our land who rise up against greed and injustice, usually fighting with no public acclaim. Ironically, they're often battling injustices perpetrated by the very same rich men whose names are so garishly splashed across our public buildings. Sadly, we recently lost one model citizen with the death of Judy Bonds, a wonderfully spirited woman from Marfork Holler down in the coal fields of West Virginia. forced out of her ancestral home a decade ago by the profiteering barons of mountaintop strip mining, Judy became the barons' worst nightmare, an enraged, fearless, knowledgeable, determined, and eloquent grassroots activist. From the hollers of Appalachia to the halls of Congress, from town meetings to university lecture halls, this tireless champion of environmental justice took Appalachia's dirty secret, the grotesque destruction that coal company greed is wreaking on the mountains, streams, and people there, into the national spotlight. Passionate, funny, and inspiring, Bonds was known as the Hillbilly Moses, rallying local coalitions to battle the greed and galvanizing a national movement to stop the ravages of mountaintop removal. This is Jim Hightower saying, Judy's gone, but her spirit lives on in the movement that she built. To connect with it, go to Coal River Mountain Watch at crmw.net.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.com.
Where common sense, reason, and community come together. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. President Who is in the country, and, you know, I got a couple, somebody on my Facebook saying, you know, they put the Chinese flag out. I'm going, well, you know, that's what you do when you have state dinners, and understand that the Chinese, we'd better figure something out and better figure it out quick. Because they're quickly becoming our equal, if not eventually our superior. And it comes back down to manufacturing. It comes back down to the fact that we have given, honestly and truthfully, we've given our industries away. And the fact that the president of China, President Hu, is telling us to stay out of Tibet, to stay out of Taiwan, that kind of tells me, you know what? They're feeling their oats. They're feeling emboldened. We're not going to do what Eisenhower did in the 50s and send the Pacific Fleet to surround Taiwan. That's not going to happen again. So the Taiwanese people, they're going to go, well, you know, we're on our own, I guess, because we're not going to support them. We'll send a couple of nice words, maybe a card, you know, box of chocolates, something along that line. But we're not sending any warships. Not happening. Not happening at all. But who visited Chicago today? Have you seen that video on YouTube where Bush and Condoleezza Rice are talking about who's the Chinese president? And they kind of do it like who's on first? Yeah, tell me who the Chinese president is. Who? I know who. Well, that's pretty funny. But anyway, he went to visit some of the factories that they own, that the Chinese own there in Chicago. And it gets me to thinking that, you know, at some point, when are we going to wake up to this? We've lost millions of jobs since 2001. We're losing industries, 44,000 factories that used to employ 500 people or more gone. And where are they gone? Asia. You look at these huge tax cuts we just handed out, big, massive tax breaks to the already wildly wealthy. Where do you think that money ended up? Ended up in China. So, you know, when I see a bunch of stories of products coming into this country, tainted products, during Christmas time, we focus on the toys filled with lead. My kids, and you know, look, my kids, I got small children. My youngest, all three of them at one point or another, everything went right to the mouth. So you're talking about putting lead in children's toys that you know right to the mouth. And we put up with it. What does that say about us? And when we come, you know, when in the next segment, I'm going to talk to a guy named Eric Bailey about the drywall that's in some of the homes in his neighborhood, and the fact that folks they can't live in their house because the smell is just horrible. It gives people headaches and dizziness and insomnia. Fatigue and loss of appetite, you know, and some of the short-term stuff, eye irritation, sore throat, coughing, headaches, nausea. Yet the CDC, nowhere to be found from what I'm saying. And, you know, the idea that they would say, oh, just open a window. That'll be fine. We've got this tainted product. Just open a window. And for me, what the problem is we cannot hold them accountable. If that was an American-made product, if that were an American company right here in this country, we'd have recourse. People would have recourse to sue them over a shoddily made product. But because they're in China, oh, good luck on that. Good luck holding them accountable for making a crappy product. And I guess that's part of the part of the draw. That's part of the allure. The reason you're seeing American companies up pulling stakes here and going there. Because we're not going to stop their products from coming back in here. It's not going to happen. They're politically too powerful. And where I would probably agree with Frank is at some level down the road, we need to reel in these corporations. I think that's what he was trying to say, that, you know, we need to reel in the corporations to give the power back to the people. And I'm right there with you on that. This idea of corporate personhood, to me, is ludicrous. But you look at this situation with the Chinese. Good luck having your case heard in their courts. Good luck going after a bad product. And, you know, as the globe gets smaller and trade goes across lines faster, we're going to have to deal with those problems more and more because evidently our government cannot protect us in that way. And evidently they're not willing to. You know, I look at this state meeting that they had. And maybe they talked about currency manipulation. Maybe they talked about copyright protection. Maybe they talked about labor. Maybe they talked about environment. Maybe they talked about this stuff. But at the end of it, the Chinese are going to do what's in the best interest of the Chinese. They don't give a rat's behind about us. We're just their customer. And they know we need them. We need their money. I mean, stop and think about how amazing this system is, how this structure has been set up against you and me. We borrow money from the Chinese to give out to people in unemployment who then go out and buy Chinese-made products. That money goes from the store that sold you the Chinese-made products. That cash goes to China because you got to pay for those products that come in. Now they're sitting on all this cash because the cash has to come back to the U.S. So they say, well, sure, we'll lend you some more money. Here you go. Pass it out and go buy some more Chinese-made products. And all the while, all we're doing is we're consuming what they're producing. And we're on this treadmill. And we're just going right along on this little treadmill of consuming their products, borrowing money, borrowing our money back from us, to buy their stuff. How insane are we? And you never hear folks getting upset about it. I mean, the fact that they bring drywall into this country, something we could produce quite well, thank you very much. But the fact that they bring it in tells me there's a serious problem. And the fact that there's a store owner out there who says, you know what, I can save about 6 cents a sheet. Yeah, I'll put some money in my pocket. I don't care about my customers, but I can put some money in my pocket. And isn't that the way the country was set up? I would argue no, but some of my friends on the extreme right would say yes. Put a little money in your pocket. And I point to this article in the Oregonian, and when you're talking about workers getting the shaft and drywall, mind you, the owner of a Hillsboro construction company was arraigned today in Washington County, Oregon Circuit Court on charges of money laundering, racketeering, and theft. See, this guy owned this drywall company. And what he would do, he would bring in employees from who knows where and pay them, you know, who knows how little, and did a whole bunch of things that prosecutors are saying amounted to 24 counts of criminal antitrust, racketeering, first-degree theft, obstruction of government administration, tampering with evidence, felony forgery, conspiracy, money laundering, all of that. Why? Well, I think the Pacific Northwest Regional Council of Carpenters guy says it best. He said that the underground economy consists of contractors who undercut union labor by hiring workers without documentation, paying them low wages, and not filing taxes. And that's not just the construction industry there. That's here. That's everywhere. You've got these, some of these scrupulous contractors, who are these fly-by-night transient contractors who use underground labor. We'll talk about wage theft right here. And for me, you know, I look at this, I hope this guy, I hope he spends a good bit of time in prison thinking about what he's done. But chances are, when he gets out, he'll go right back to it. Because we don't have the labor laws to stop it. Just like we don't have the laws to stop the Chinese drywall coming in. And this guy's probably a guy who put Chinese drywall in your house.
Yet, incredibly, I mean, you talk how bad it is. Incredibly, Brent Hume, I don't know if you watch Fox News enough, but he's one of their... It's one of their mainstays. He's their big political guy over there. And I heard him, and I almost fell off my chair when he said it. He said, well, you know, we complain about Walmart. We complain about Chinese products coming in. Yet, many Americans have gone into Walmart and bought these cheap products, and it's been such an economic boon to America. And I'm thinking, are you kidding me? I can't believe he just said that. But he did. So we're trading a couple cents here and a couple cents there for good jobs in the future of the country. Yet, those who are the protectors, and Fox News is, those who are the protectors of the interest of the multinationals would actually put that canard out.
Well, at the end of it, look, they've got to push their advertisers as well, and I'm sure Walmart is a big advertiser. And honestly and truthfully, you know, some people, they were able to get big screen TVs that they probably wouldn't be able to afford had to pay real wages. You know, they had to get instead of a 32 inch, they got a 26 inch. And, you know, hey, you know, we got to have our 32. At the end of it, you know, maybe there are some cases where the consumer was a little bit better off. But what are you first? When I talk about myself, I'm a working person first. I have to work to earn my income. And that money, then I become a consumer with. So for me, first and foremost, I'm a worker. And I want to protect my job. I want to protect my paycheck. I want to make sure that kids can eat. And I want other people to be able to do that as well. And then, second, I'm a consumer. And the mindset in this country is, first I'm a consumer, and then, well, I have to go to work. I mean, at least it seems that way to me.
Well, how about being an American first and foremost?
That ship sailed.
Well, you know, but should it?
No,
when I say that, Rick, I mean that we all love our country. I mean, I'm not getting into a discussion and saying that the people that buy at Walmart aren't patriotic and love their country. But what I'm saying is, when you say America first, that's enlightened self-interest. What does that mean? If you put the interest of America first, what you mean is you're putting the future of this country first. You put the future of this country first, that means jobs, that means the quality of life, that means what direction we're going as a country. And in the end, we are all better off in spite of saving a couple hundred here, $10 over here, $5 here. We're all much better off protecting jobs and keeping them in America. And that's, well, at the end of the day, for me, see, that's what it means.
It's only good for you working people. It's only good for you people at the bottom. Me, who I'm a professional. I'm above that work. I want that cheap exploitable labor because I want to be able to have the big, you know, not the 32. I want the 45-inch TV. No, screw it. I want the 55-inch TV.
Well, you can make the argument that you're a professional. Okay, you're let's say you're a you're a big shot in one of the corporations, and they sell product. Well, you know, there's a simple concept that says people don't have good jobs and don't make enough money. Maybe they won't be able to buy your product. So, Mr. Big Shot, driving that big luxury car, thinking you're a little bit better, maybe you better look a little bit into the future and expand your
see,
knowledge.
Right there breaks down your whole argument. American business doesn't think into the future. They think to the next quarter.
But from a personal
standpoint,
I understand they do. But that individual has that mindset, and I think we call them, for the most part, yuppies.
Yeah.
Yuppies who, you know, they want the best, they drive, they get the chic clothes, and they drive the big car, and they're the well-educated, they're the elite. Well, you know what, Mr. Yuppie, long-term, unless we start thinking of America, you're not going to have the lifestyle you have either.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. When we come back, Eric Bailey, he lives in Newport News, Virginia. We're going to talk about the 37 people in his area where the homes are filled with drywall and most of them are empty. We're back after this.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
If you or a loved one has suffered a workplace injury, don't jeopardize your benefits by not fully knowing your rights. Don't be misled by those whose job it is to minimize your injury, your disability, your lifetime medical coverage, and your financial recovery. Order your free book by Calhoun Associates by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Get your copy of The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 717-695-4722.
Amy Morton, Executive Director of CAIU, on the decision to switch to Capital Blue Cross Health Insurance.
By moving to Capital Blue Cross, we were able to achieve savings that we had never expected. We're getting quality care and tremendous customer service. As both a consumer of health care and as the director of this agency, I couldn't be happier that we switched to Capital Blue Cross.
To learn more, call 1-800-976-2242 or visit capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association.
As you're born, they make you feel small by giving you no time instead of it all. Till the pain is so big you feel nothing at all.
If it's class warfare, my class is winning, but they shouldn't be.
A working class hero is something to be.
The taxation system has tilted toward the rich and away from the middle class.
Working class hero is something to be.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Last night we talked to Colleen Stevens. She told us about her home that was built with Chinese drywall and the absolute horrors that this woman and her five kids are going through, ending up having to live in their driveway for months, having the resources to move to another home and leave that one empty, and all of the problems, 22-month ordeal. Just an amazing story, and I thought it was important that people hear more of these stories, especially since the Chinese president is here in the country. And I do. I think this is important stuff because you need to know what these products are. That's why I've asked Eric Bailey to come on and talk to us about his situation. Eric, welcome to the program.
Hey, Rick. Thanks so much for taking time to talk with us about this very important topic that's destroyed the lives of so many Americans.
You know, I do. I believe this is a hugely important issue, and we need to be talking about more products, not just in your case the drywall, but you know, the fish that comes in here, the children's toys, the dog food, the list goes on. The toothpaste with antifreeze in it, the list goes on.
Yes, you know, I bought what I thought at the time was a wonderful new home in December of 2006. Which quickly turned into a nightmare. Within about 6 months of moving in, I had so many problems, electrical problems going on with my house. You know, my friends began to tell me that my house was built on someone's grave. You know, with a new house, you don't think of things like brand new microwave breaking, brand new dishwasher breaking, you just don't think about these things.
Right. So let me ask you, how did you figure out it was the drywall, right?
Yes, it's the drywall. I found out, I've been living here a couple of years. I just thought I had the worst luck of any human being possible.
I know that
but,
feeling.
One day, I own a company. I work outside during the day. And I got home August of 2009. I'm getting out of my car, and my neighbor comes over, and he says, "Have you been having problems with your house?" I've never spoken to the guy before, and I said, "Yeah, I'm having a lot of problems." And he was animated and cursing, and he said, "Well, I've been here 2 years, and I've had 9 air conditioners."
Wow.
9 air conditioners, 2 years, brand new house. I said, "Well, I don't feel so bad. I've had 3. You know, I felt blessed at that point. And anyway, we chatted for a bit, and I said, "We've got to figure out what's wrong with these houses." And he said, "Have you checked your email today?" And I said, "No." And he said, "Well, a lot of the neighbors' air conditioners quit all on one day." And so
I would think, it sounds like the whole neighborhood's haunted.
Exactly. That's what you would think. So after a long, hot day outside, when you get home in the afternoon, you walk in and you just love to feel that air conditioning. So I open the door to my house, and it's hot in my house. And I said, "Oh, my goodness, not again." So I get on the Internet that night, and I'm livid. You know, I've lost so many air conditioners. I've spent $10,000 on plasma televisions since I moved in the house. Okay? This was before I knew what the problem was.
Well, it must be nice to be rich.
No, not rich. Broke. I posted something on my Facebook page. That said, you know, my house is cursed or something. Well, the next day, a very good friend of mine calls me and he says, "I saw something on the news about Chinese drywall. Maybe you have it. I know someone who has it, and you should call them." And I'm sitting there. It took me a couple of days. And I'm thinking, this sounds crazy that drywall can make your television break or your stove break. And so finally I called a guy, and after talking to him for some time, I deduced that he's crazy. You know, it doesn't make sense logically. How can drywall make your TV break? So then I go to a meeting that was very informative, and at the end of the meeting I was talking to some people, and I said, if they come out and test my house, And it does, in fact, if it doesn't have this drywall problem like all you people think, I asked the person, will you help me figure out what's wrong with my house in our neighborhood? And several people heard me ask that question or make that statement, and that a couple people looked at me and said, "You need to wake up." And it took a couple of days to digest this problem. And I came home, I started talking to some of the neighbors, and it was amazing. It was like 36 of my other neighbors come out of the woodwork, and they're like, "Oh, yeah, I've had 2 air conditioners, I've had 3. My neighbor who was deathly ill for about a year trying to get her doctorate lost 3 computers while she was writing her thesis. Just the stories.
And I'm sure some people were sick, and I'm sure they had the nausea and the bloody noses and all that, too, as well.
Yes. A lady that lives behind me, they've been out of the house about a year now. Her son, who I believe was about 16 at the time, was diagnosed with fibromyalgia.
Wow.
Which is predominantly a woman's disease.
Right.
And, the stories are just heartbreaking.
So let me ask you this, Eric, because, my first thought would be go after the contractor. Somebody built that whole development. Somebody's got to be responsible for this, and somebody's got to fix it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wish we could. In my case, my contractor is a small guy. He's built over 100 homes. I don't think he has the resources, and if he did, he'd probably just close and go out of business.
Let me ask you this. How much did he save by using the Chinese drywall?
Well, at the time, American drywall was selling for about $15 a sheet, and the gentleman that imported it into Virginia paid about $3 a sheet. Yeah, I think you said, I was listening to your program earlier, and you were mentioning maybe 6 cents or save a few pennies, and he was out raping people.
Yeah, I'm sure he was charging probably, 12 bucks a sheet, and you were saving a little bit, and he was making a whole lot.
Right.
And now you're stuck with this problem. Where are you going from here? Are you still living in the house?
I'm still living in the house. I can't afford to move out. I started a new business about the time that all of this began to unfold, and I just don't have the resources with my new business to move out.
So what are you doing? I mean, because you've got to be worried that something's going to health-wise happen to you. You've got to worry that something, by being exposed to this for so long, that this can't be good for you.
Yeah, I am. Fortunately, I'm not home a lot, which I think is probably one of the reasons I've not been sick. I'm outdoors a lot. But one of the things that really upsets us as homeowners is, you know, we find out that Congress can haul, like, a company like Toyota and BP and Halliburton in for a congressional hearing, but we're scared of China. We can't demand that they come and fix their wrong.
I'm right there with you, brother. Been talking about that for years.
Yeah, it's just amazing that we owe them so much money. It's like a little kid tugging on his mother's jacket, saying, "Mom, will you please?"
Yeah, Mother, may I?
Yeah, Mother, may I?
Yeah, and look, you know, it's us. It's not our government. It's us. We're the ones who buy the cheap drywall. We're the ones who buy the toys and all the trinkets. You know, a friend had a great comment. You know, for too long we've been trading jobs, good jobs, for cheap toasters, and that's what it's come down to. And this is where we end up in situations where folks like you who are left out on an island, because I don't know where the help for you is going to come from. Your insurance company's not going to help, is it?
No. In fact, that's another good point. My insurance is up for renewal in March, and I'm very concerned that I won't be able to have homeowner's insurance.
That's incredible. And, you know, for me, you know, I look at health care, for instance.
Right.
You know, here's the thing. I could see down the line a health insurance company saying, "I'm sorry, Mr. Bailey. You live in a house with Chinese drywall. We can't cover you because you're going to have all of these exposures." I mean, it's kind of weird that we repeal the health care bill. That's something that could possibly happen down the road.
It is. We've been to Washington maybe 4 or 5 times now. And what's even more disgusting is that this is a partisan issue.
How is this a partisan issue?
Because if a Democrat comes up with an idea of how to fix this, the Republican thinks it's a bad idea. And if a Republican comes up with a good idea on how to fix this, the Democrat says it's a bad idea. They don't want to work together. You know, this is not a partisan issue. This is an American issue about doing the right thing for its citizens. I went to a hearing on Tuesday in Richmond. And the committee was more concerned about damaging the insurance industry than doing what was right for tax-paying Americans. And what's even sadder through this whole thing is that I've not met one person through all of the folks that I've met that have Chinese drywall in our area who's a slouch. Everyone is a hardworking. They pay their bills. They wanted to live the American dream. They built a nice home, moving up in the world, trying to do the right thing, being a good citizen, and then our government does this to us and doesn't stand up and protect us when they let it into the country.
All comes back down to our trade policies for me.
It's right.
Just amazing stuff. And to me, it's not a partisan issue. This is, as you pointed out, this is an American issue. This is protecting the people. And man, I'll tell you, it's infuriating when I hear stories like this.
You know, last fall, or I guess it was the days seem to sort of blend together. I guess it was a year ago, about 100 days before the Haiti earthquake. I began to write the White House daily. I said, I'm going to make this my nightly ritual to contact the White House because they really should step up and do something. And, you know, as I mentioned before, I'm outside all day. So I get home at night. I check my email. I've never gotten a response from the White House. I sit down. I pull up my email. And it says, I got an email from the White House, and I said, oh, finally, we may be getting somewhere. I open up my email, and it says, I, President Obama, am sending $100 million to Haiti, and I'm doing it right now. And I wasn't mad that we were trying to help Haiti, because we as Americans try to do the right thing.
Right.
But we always try to do the right thing for other countries. And we have so many people here that need help. And why can't we start with our front porch before we start cleaning the front porch on some other country?
Let me ask you this last question I've got for you. Okay. How do you think this should be resolved? I mean, we're pointing fingers at the government. Who's responsible for this in your mind at the end of it?
Well, I think there's a lot of blame to go around. I think the builders are responsible. I think our government is responsible for allowing it into the country and not providing safe, trade deals. And I think we shouldn't be buying things from China.
I absolutely agree with you. Eric, I hope nothing but the best for you. I hope this gets resolved sometime in the future. And I hope the best for your health as you move forward.
Well, thank you for taking time out to talk about this very important topic.
Thank you so much. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
All right. Just make us be brave. Make us play nice. Let us be together tonight.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
That old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made, and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All union signs and promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
I am the god of hellfire, and I bring you fire.
You gotta wonder if all of these flamethrowers, all of these crazy right wingers, are gonna find themselves burning in a fiery, in a fiery hole, down, down, down. You gotta wonder. You look at this hate pastor Terry Jones from Florida. Remember the guy who, I'm gonna burn me a Koran. Well, they're not letting him into the UK. Sorry, the British are saying no, you're not coming in. We oppose extremism in all of its forms. So they're basically putting him in the same class as Al-Qaeda, which, you know, kind of goes along with what you said earlier. Also, right-wing anti-Muslim expert Steve Emerson, he's enraged because he wasn't invited to Peter King's little hate fest. Peter King had this big hate fest, so... Emerson, you know, whining, says, I was even going to bring a very, very, very special guest and a very informed and connected source who could have been very useful, too. But he, too, will not attend unless I do. I don't think we want either one of them, to be honest with you. And then Rick Santorum today.
Oh,
Rick Santorum had really an interesting quote. Here it is.
I find it almost remarkable for a black man to say, no, we are going to decide who are people and who are not people.
I find it interesting that a black man is going to decide who are people and who are not. A black man. This guy wants to be president.
Yes. Now, this is the guy who kind of disappeared off the landscape for a while, and then,
He got beaten off the landscape.
Well, Bob Casey just kicked his proverbial butt. You know, Fox News rode to the rescue, and for a while, I felt so much better, I slept so much better when he was considered a national security advisor for Fox News, Rick. I just slept like a baby knowing that. So here he comes out, and this is what he says. He says he's disappointed that Obama, a former law professor, refuses to treat fetuses as humans under the Constitution. Of course, the White House declined comment. But here's this man who wants to run for president. He wants to maybe challenge Barack Obama in 2012. He's linked civil rights with abortion during an interview that was posted Thursday with the Christian Broadcasting Network. Of course, in 2006, as we said, he lost that reelection bid in Pennsylvania. But... And he goes into something like, which to me doesn't make a lot of sense, Rick. This is what he said. He notes that for decades, slavery allowed African Americans to be treated like property. And he says fetuses are denied the right to life because they are considered property. I'm not quite sure where he's going on that. I don't see the connection. I think it would, I don't know if it was a desperate attempt to, I don't know, get curry favor with the right. But
the idiot doofus base,
You know, I don't know where he's coming from. I respect the man to have any opinion he wants on abortion. I understand that it's a very emotional issue. But hey, this ain't going to get it. I hate to tell Rick Santorum, but this ain't going to get him president. I mean, this just kind of puts him in the right wing loony section, you know. He didn't come off very well. It didn't make a lot of sense.
Nothing, and I see nothing.
Yeah, well, you know, hey, you know, as long as Tricky Ricky's in the race, we're going to have something to talk about.
But
you know, Palin Santorum.
But you know what? As crazy as it was, just to show you how far right the Republican Party has come, I think he felt that he had to do something like that to curry favor with the far right.
Well, again, you know, it goes back to this whole outraging the outrage. And I can't believe you, of all people, Jake, You, of all people, didn't come in here and say, you know that doofus that does the radio show, Bob Doofus over here? Said, oh, we need to blow up the New York Times. He's probably said that 100 times before, trying to catch someone's attention, trying to outrage somebody so he could get his picture and his mug in the newspaper. So that, oh, hey, maybe one of the networks will notice him. Hey, I said something crazy. I'm acting nuts. Woo! I mean, on that side of the aisle, in what they do, because they have to outrage the outrage. They've got to be the one out in front grabbing attention. Because actually having something rational to say, something thoughtful to say, those people don't want to hear that. You know, it's like, you know, like pulling wings off of a fly. That's what they want. They're the kids who fry ants with magnifying glasses. You know, that's the people listening to that stuff. Actually, folks with a quarter of a brain, they don't want to listen to that.
And isn't that, on the one hand, that's scary. On the other hand, it's tragic that our political discourse, we've gotten away from just sound logic arguments. I mean, it's one thing to argue with somebody, and I have the greatest respect for our system and our freedoms. You know, you're entitled to your opinion, but when logic means nothing, and they've already had their mind made up, and it's all about ideology, and it's all about pandering to what you believe are your, in many cases, to these people, deeper-rooted religious...
Psychosis.
Religious and political beliefs, to not be able to have an intelligent discourse. Does this nation no favor at all? And in the end, that's going to hurt our country, and it has hurt our country, obviously.
Yeah, I'm sure if that's what I wanted to do, I could grab somebody's attention by saying something dumb. Because it's not hard to say dumb stuff.
I mean, just imagine, Rick.
It's not hard to outrage people. It's not.
Your girlfriend. I mean, every week she just comes out with things that you look at, you know, you look at each other and say, what? Is she serious? I mean, this...
hey, you leave Michelle Bachmann alone.
Oh, my God. But I'm really seriously... On the one hand, it's funny. But on the one hand, it's tragic. How someone like her can stay in the halls of the U.S. Congress and be reelected.
She believes.
Rick, why don't you, before you go to bed, do your phone, email your girlfriend and tell her, look, you know, Obamacare, as you name it, is not socialized medicine. It isn't anywhere close to socialized medicine. At least get that straight.
Again, you seem to think that words mean something.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Silly you.
I know, I like
you seem to think that
Rick, even I.
You seem to think that we're talking the same language. Oh, silly you.
Even I like to use my mouth to eat, and you know I love to eat. I also understand that you use that to, express intelligent thoughts. Or am I wrong on that?
I'm not sure where you're going with that.
Well, my point...
I'm missing the whole...
My point is, as human beings, we should be making an effort to converse with our fellow human beings on an intelligent level.
Now, speaking of that, former RNC chairman Michael Steele told CNN yesterday that he believes the GOP is relieved he was not reelected to lead the party again, saying, quote, I think the people in the party, particularly the establishment, are breathing a sigh of relief. They have control of the RNC now. Let's see what they do with it. I think of that. I go, Mike, did you ever have control of the RNC? Were you ever really in power? Did you ever? Not so much. We're going to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK. When we come back, Craig Holman, legislative guru over at Public Citizen. He's their government affairs lobbyist, focusing on campaign finance. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
The Rick
Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. The Supreme Court ruled on Wednesday that background checks of scientists and other government contract workers do not violate constitutional privacy rights. After the September 11, 2001 attacks, background checks were extended to companies and universities that play a role in projects funded by the government. The court overturned a previous ruling by the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals that said the background checks of contractors were a violation of privacy. Justice Samuel Alito wrote on behalf of the court that the government has wide latitude when it deals with employees, and that includes contract workers. However, Scalia and Justice Clarence Thomas went further by writing a concurring opinion suggesting informational privacy is a right that does not exist. Scalia went on to challenge the concept of informational privacy rights, calling the idea farcical. He wrote that there is no right deeply rooted in our history and tradition that bars the government from ensuring that the Hubble telescope is not used by recovering drug addicts. The case before the Supreme Court was brought by 28 veteran scientists and researchers at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in California. Since August 2009, workers have been in negotiations with a number of hotels in San Francisco. One of those hotels is San Francisco's Grand Hyatt. The workers, represented by Unite Here Local 2, on Tuesday, gathered to let their concerns be known. The hotel has been the focus of strike action and boycotts, with the union charging that Hyatt hasn't bargained in good faith while trying to reach a fair contract. The two sides are scheduled to meet again on February 1st as negotiations head into the 16th month. The union has also launched a boycott against Hilton Hotels in San Francisco. Some of the issues the workers are working toward in negotiations with the hotels are a fair pension, affordable health care, and reasonable workloads. Greensboro, North Carolina received tough employment news on Wednesday when American Express announced it would be shuttering a service center. The end result of the closure will impact 1,900 workers. American Express Senior Vice President Bob Geringer tried to put a positive spin on the closure in a memo to employees. He wrote, "We have 1,900 people who are affected by this decision, and therefore we have 1,900 possibilities. Many of the workers could end up being transferred to other U.S. service centers or possibly work from home."
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters? Rick Smith.
The rich pay too much taxes. The poor give way too much. Instead of schools, build prisons and lock the children up. We won't believe those lies again, because God is a Republican.
The 21st anniversary of the U.S. Supreme Court's Citizens United decision, according to the Sunlight Foundation, total outside spending on federal campaigns amounted to nearly $500 million. Corporate America has exercised their freedom to spend without any restriction, and they did, giving money to a number of highly funded front groups to do their bidding, and we watched the negative ads ad nauseum that ripped our process to shreds. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce spent more than $32 million. Karl Rove's two groups spent more than $38 million. American Action Network spent $15 million. AFSCME spent just over $10 million. And we keep hearing, oh, the big bad union. So I guess the question is, good thing, bad thing? Was its decision right, wrong? I guess it depends on which side you're on. I've got Craig Holman here on the line. He is a government affairs lobbyist for Public Citizen. He focuses on campaign finance and government ethics. Craig, welcome to the program.
Glad to be here.
You know, I in looking at this decision, I guess it's which side of the fence do you fall on? Decide if it's good or bad.
The overwhelming majority of Americans
find this decision completely comprehensive, I mean, intolerable. I mean, this decision has not only increased the amount of money being spent by outside groups in our elections fourfold, about 427% increase, but it's also resulted in much of that money, most of that money, going entirely undisclosed to the public, and has not only endangered our process of elections, but endangered the legislative process itself. I mean, that money has tended to be very effective at unseating lawmakers from Congress and replacing them with lawmakers who are more compliant to the corporations that funded these elections. Keep in mind, this is unlimited corporate money the U.S. Supreme Court has now allowed to flood into our elections, and nothing good is coming of this.
What do you make of the charge? And I think it was Common Cause who came out today and said that the two justices, Scalia and Thomas, should have recused themselves because they had some contact with the Koch brothers and some strategy meetings on how to get corporations more involved. And what do you think of that?
Well, it's a difficult argument to press. The Supreme Court historically does not usually recuse themselves, or members of the justices of the court recuse themselves, and there's no particular legal obligation for them to do so. On an ethical standard, you can certainly say, yes, if they had a conflict of interest, they should have recused themselves. If they're actually working with some political coalition for a particular political objective, that poses a conflict of interest. We don't know if they were actually working with any type of coalition with an agenda in mind. But, more importantly, that the thing that weakens the argument that Common Cause is posing is it's really far a shot. I do believe there is a potential conflict of interest, and it should be looked at closely. And if indeed someone like Thomas, because of his wife accepting corporate money and wanting to see more corporate money flow into politics, if that did influence Thomas's decision, there is a basis for recusal. But this is a far shot argument that Common Cause is posing.
Right, but I'm looking at this decision, and I'm not a lawyer, but as I understand it, this is 100 years of precedence that was overturned. And if I remember going back to the confirmation hearings of Chief Justice Roberts, he was going to be a guy who was just going to call balls and strikes. So for me to have the Roberts Court overturn 100 years of decided law kind of makes me question.
Now, that's an argument that really makes me angry when we talk about any justice that should have known better. It is Roberts. I mean, Roberts was confirmed saying that he would honor judicial precedent, that he would just call balls and strikes, as you notice. And one of the first things he did as soon as he got on the court is he started reversing not only 100 years of, political tradition going on, dating all the way back to what may end up being the Tillman Act of 1907, but he even reversed the Supreme Court decision of just 3 years earlier. Back in 2002, the U.S. Supreme Court, the Rehnquist Court, which was not known as being a radical left-wing court, upheld in full the McCain-Feingold law, the Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act, and just a few years later after that, Roberts led the court in the Wisconsin Right to Life decision, reversing a major tenet of that decision. And then finally, in Citizens United, he essentially threw out all the previous judicial decisions relating to corporations under the First Amendment. That's a justice that really violated his oath.
Yeah, and basically what he has done, and I personally don't think that multinational corporations who have interests all around the world should be able to be considered people, because I guess this is what this is doing. We're giving them First Amendment rights. I don't think they should have that kind of power in our democracy.
none of these corporations should have, domestic or foreign corporations, should have that sort of authority in our democracy. The First Amendment was never written by the Founding Fathers declaring we the corporations, or we the people and corporations, shall have the right to vote and shall have the freedom of speech to spend unlimited amounts of money. This is an invention by five justices on the Roberts Court. And by the way, I want to add that this decision, the Citizens United decision, was so controversial, having five justices declaring that corporations shall be treated as people under the First Amendment, you had the other four justices writing a vicious argument against it, saying this is outrageous. Not only are we violating judicial precedents and 100 years of political jurisprudence, but no one ever in their right mind ever envisioned corporations as people under the First Amendment. And, you know, this is what we've ended up with. You know, what happened was George Bush, prior to departing Washington, D.C., was able to make two new appointments to the Supreme Court. Yep. And that's what threw it over to a five-member conservative majority.
And I wouldn't even say conservative. I would more argue corporatist. I mean, you look at the decisions, the Supreme Court has never been more friendly to arguments made by the Chamber of Commerce than they are right now.
Yes, that's absolutely right. You are proper in correcting me. We almost always have had a conservative Supreme Court, but this court just goes overboard when it comes to protecting and defending corporate interests, even to the point of making corporations just like you and I.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Craig Holman. He's government affairs lobbyist for Public Citizen. His focus is on campaign finance and government ethics. You know, I'm looking at this, and corporations have pretty good control over our lives even before this. And I'm looking at down the road, you know, it was a joke during the last election that a corporation ran for Congress. I'm kind of wondering, is that what we're going to see in the future because of this?
You know, it's a very valid question, even though it was not part of the Citizens United decision. When you read that decision by those five justices, they not only waffle on whether or not it's okay for foreign interests to start financing American elections, but the rationale would seem to suggest that if corporations are to be treated as people under the First Amendment, what's wrong with having them run for office or vote, for that matter? You know, the rationale can certainly be carried over. And, you know, we're going to see more of these issues being litigated as we go on. Already, for instance, a number of lobbyists for foreign corporations have filed a lawsuit challenging the federal ban on foreign interests financing U.S. elections. So, we're going to see more and more litigation going the way of corporate interests.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, during the election and directly after, you know, I was screaming about the fact that the International Chamber of Commerce was spending money from their AmChams, these chapters they have all around the country, and they wouldn't disclose, and I don't believe to this point they've disclosed what money that they took in from their foreign interests and what that money was used for. So I would make the argument that we've already got foreign money making decisions on who sits in our halls of power.
We certainly don't know. You know, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce refused to disclose any of their expenditures. You know, you mentioned they spent $31 million just in the 2010 elections, and we don't have a clue where that money came from. We do know the Chamber of Commerce has foreign interests and foreign companies belonging to it, and for that matter, even foreign governmental entities and agencies. And, you know, they could have just chipped in into the kitty of the Chamber of Commerce, used specifically to promote those candidates who ran for office who defend the chamber's interests. And by the chamber's interests, we mean corporate interests. Yes, we could well have foreign money. We just don't have a clue. You know, that's another thing I want to bring up, Rick. I mean, one thing that really is bothersome about this is not just the fact that we have so much more money flowing into our elections, but most of it really went undisclosed.
Yep.
When it comes to this outside money. You know, corporations like Boeing or BP or
Walmart, any of them.
Or any of these did not want to run an actual ad themselves saying BP is angry at Democrats for making them clean up the oil spill, so please vote Republican. So instead, they would funnel the money, you know, through other entities and go entirely undisclosed at that point.
Yeah, and one of the things that I've been saying is I want total transparency, total disclosure. You know, if you're going to have, like here in Pennsylvania, for instance, there's a group that we've just found out about that's starting up their conservative, you know, right-wing group, attack group, and they refuse to disclose who their funders are. And I'm saying, put out your message, but at least let us know who's pushing you, who's paying your bills.
That's right, and I did not mean to be partisan in my critique here. It's just that in the 2010 elections, when we suddenly had corporations funding the elections, it did go very disproportionately on behalf of Republican candidates.
Oh, absolutely. But here's the thing, and this is the argument that I get in response to this as well. Well, labor unions spend a lot of money, and look, AFSCME spent $10 million in the last cycle. Now, granted, there was $100 million against them, but that, they still spent $10 million. But we know where every penny of that money came from. They have total disclosure. They've got an entire department of government, the Department of Labor, that oversees every single penny. There's not a Department of Business that oversees every penny that business spends in politics.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, no one is calling for preventing outside groups from spending, you know, money in elections. Just the main call is that outside groups should actually disclose where they're getting their money from. You know, it was kind of an amazing little legislative debate we had here on Capitol Hill in 2010. Bring up the partisan conflict again. I mean, many Democrats, because they had imposed, supported regulation of the financial services industry and Wall Street, you know, as well as the healthcare industry, knew that many of these corporations, now unleashed by the five justices on the Supreme Court, would spend heavily to unseat them and replace them with more corporate-friendly Republican candidates. And so the Democrats were pushing for just a straightforward disclosure act. You know, let the American public know where this money is coming from.
Yep.
And it passed the House. It was passing the Senate, except every single Republican senator in the Senate stood in block and launched a filibuster against it. So even though it got 59 votes for passage in the Senate, which is a majority, it could not get that one other vote in order to overcome the filibuster. Not a single Republican would allow Americans to know where this money is coming from.
That's because that's in their pockets. So let me ask you a last question then, because for me the answer is publicly financed elections. Get our politicians get their hands out of the corporate till, and make them beholden to us. I'm curious what your thoughts are. How do we fix this horrible decision, one, but more importantly, how do we fix our system?
Public financing of elections is the number one objective to try to help reduce the damage that's been done by the Citizens United decision. I strongly support that, and so does Public Citizen. But there are other measures we can take. We can try to require what the United Kingdom does, and that is when a corporation wants to make political expenditures, they have to tell their shareholders about it and get shareholder approval for those political expenditures. We can have a disclose act, so it's fully disclosed to the public. We can restrict government contractors from making campaign contributions or expenditures in elections in exchange for receiving a government contract. And perhaps the one most important thing is we can run a constitutional amendment to clarify to those five justices what the First Amendment really means.
And make it say for people. Human, natural-born people.
That's right. Straightforward and simple, just as the Founding Fathers intended it.
Amazing stuff. Craig Holman, I appreciate your time. Thanks so much. Government Affairs Lobbyist for Public Citizen. Public Citizen, or citizen.org, correct?
That's correct.
All right, Craig, thanks so much.
Take care.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Right back after this.
You
assets, reason, and community come together. The Rick Smith Show.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask Me Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, Ask Me Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
To the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. At a briefing hosted by the Economic Policy Institute, the Century Foundation, and Demos, major pollsters said that President Obama's failure to say that he will rule out regressive cuts to Social Security, well, he'll take that off the table, that's turning off voters. One of the poll results from Lake Research Partners finds that perhaps for the first time ever, voters are trusting Republicans more than Democrats when it comes to Social Security. Think about that for a second. It has been the Democrats all along who brought us the program, who were the guardians of it, and now you're seeing this poll kind of turning around. And to me, again, you know, the Republicans are the ones who have been saying all along, just with different words, that they want to privatize it. Oh, we want to make sure everyone has individual accounts. That's not privatizing. No, it's not. What is it? If everybody has an individual private account, what is it? Remember, Social Security was anti-poverty insurance. The whole idea was to make sure that there was a floor so that nobody fell below that, so that people didn't have to eat cat food. And now we've got this debt commission, this deficit commission that came out with their report saying, oh, we need to get rid of the entitlements. And I was watching C-SPAN today for a couple of minutes, and the guy said, well, you know, these entitlements, they're just like a big, giant sucking machine that just shoots money out. And, yes, he said sucking and shoots in the same action. Can't figure that out. But, yeah, it just sucks all this money and shoots it right out. All these entitlements, how dare these people want Social Security? How dare they want Medicare? Yet they don't want to do anything to shore it up for too long. And now we know that the system is pretty solvent for some time. 2037, Social Security is fine if we do nothing. And I say, you know, instead of going the way that they're talking about, which is raise the retirement age, lower the benefit rates, why not take in a couple extra bucks? Why not do something to help the working people? And again, this is one of those things where I wish campaign Obama were around. The guy who was talking about standing up for the working people. And maybe we need to call him. Maybe we need to tell him, hey, Prez, buddy, stop with this business, these business talking points. You want to solve Social Security's problem? It's simple. Take the cap off of it. You lower taxes on about 90% of the people, 99% of the people in this country by taking that 13%, the 12.6% tax rate that Social Security has. Drop that down to about 5% so employers get a break. In fact, don't even charge the employer version of Social Security. Put a 5% on the employee. So it's theirs. It gives them ownership. Take the employer right out of it. You still give everybody a tax cut. There's more money to be had. And you know what? The system is solved. Because if you've seen some of the numbers, the top 5%, and this is one of those things that just boggles the mind. In this last round of numbers, the top fifth percentile, that top 5%, the average income was $200,000 a year for the top 5%. Do you know what the top 0.1% was making? Over $2 million a year. And you break that down to the 100th percent, over $50 million a year. Now understand, that top 0.1% pays Social Security tax up to $106,800. That's only on the earned income. Now those people in that strata, they don't go to work and punch a clock, so they don't earn income. That money comes in dividend checks, capital gains. The other thing I would do, all income is income. I don't care where it came from. I came from a bank account. I don't care if it came from a stock transaction. I don't care if Grandma Millie broke open her piggy bank and gave you 10 grand. Every bit is income. Every bit is taxed. You want fair? You want fair? That's fair. What these idiots are talking about, oh, we need just a fair tax. Their version of a fair tax is about as fair as the Patriot Act is patriotic. But I'll tell you know, you got these folks out here, oh, we need just, you know, I heard this blah, blah, blah say we need fair tax. I agree. And what's it get us? It gets us in the working class screwed. And no, most people don't even seem to remember this high Social Security tax. You could thank Ronald Reagan for this. Him and Greenspan dreamt this thing up. Largest tax increase in the history of the country. And we've been paying it ever since. And you know what they figured out? Hey, we can steal it. And they did. And like Alan Simpson said, we don't want to pay it back. We've spent it. It's gone. Don't worry about it. It's roads. It's bridges. It's also wars, Alan. Don't forget that. Think all that money we blew on the war. Just mind blowing.
Talk about Social Security. What you're talking about when you talk about privatizing, I mean, these Republicans are smart. I mean, I disagree with them 100% most of the time, but they know how to play a game. They know that they can't say, well, we don't need Social Security anymore. Let's just eliminate it. So you got guys like Paul Ryan, who, by the way, is now the budget committee chairman for the Republicans. I remember going back about 6 months, 8 months. He came out with his own proposal, and just as you said, his proposal was, well, let's let these young people, if they want to, set up their own private accounts. You know, give them the option. Well, once you start that, it's the proverbial camel's nose under the tent, and the slippery slope, and before you know it, Social Security is going to be underfunded. Thank God that it wasn't taken up. But you know, I like your proposal, Rick. It makes sense on two accounts. If you're paying 5 or 4 instead of 6, that's a nice little incentive. That's a stimulus to the economy. And at the same time, the truly rich are going to be paying their fair share. And at the end of the day, we're all much better off because you would have enough money far, far, far into the future.
And then as we pick up and we end up knowing, saying, hey, we've got enough, you can back that down to 3%. And that's a stimulus as well. We need to shore up our retirement system. The Republicans want to tear it down. They want desperate working class. They don't want you to retire with dignity. And we're not just seeing it here in this country. We're seeing it across the globe. The conservative movement's not happy. They're not happy that there's a working class that can enjoy some of the comforts that they've enjoyed for years.
But how many people your age, Rick, or younger, especially younger, how many times have they said, well, you start talking about Social Security, well, I won't have it because it won't be there. And you look at them and say, well, why is that? Well, because they were told that.
It's been repeated ad nauseum.
But yet, if you sit down and you talk to them and the logic, the light goes on. Oh, well, you know what? Maybe it will be there. And there's no reason why it shouldn't be. Unless we allow the purveyors of fear to win the day. But there's no reason why. And if we eliminate Social Security, God help the working class. That's all I can say.
Well, I got to be honest with you. This health care debate has made me think. And when we come back, I want to talk about this health care bill a little bit. The fact that they've repealed in the House. Now, it's still going to be law. They're not going to be able to do away with the law. They will, I think, will try to defund it, and they will cause a bunch of problems there. And we'll see where that takes us. But I do want to talk about this whole idea of how we got to where we are and where I think we need to go as we move forward. And I'm hoping we do move forward. I'm hoping that the Republicans, they have their little tantrum, because this is what this has been the last couple of days. Their little tantrum, the little two-year-olds kicking, screaming, you know, doing the fingers in the ear things. I got three kids. I understand. They go through their phase. So we're seeing the Republicans going through their tantrum phase. Hopefully they'll grow out of it. We'll see. I'm hoping they grow out of it. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about health care. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We'll be right back.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
When you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make that way to have it.
That old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well?
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Come all ya good workers, good news to you out there. Move out the good old union has come in here to clear. Which side are you on? Which side are you on?
You know, that's the question. Which side in this debate are you on? Are you on the side of status quo, back to the way it was? Pay or die. Or are you on the side of moving towards a little bit of security? Moving toward, if you get sick, you're not going to lose your home. If you get sick, you're not going to go bankrupt. If your children are sick, that they're going to be covered. And they're not going to have to worry into the future if they're going to have a pre-existing condition. There's a lot of this that we're just not thinking about. And you know what? On the intro here, it talks about, you know, proud defender of the American dream. What is the American dream? Is it chasing as much as you can possibly get and screwing as many people as you can possibly get? I don't think so. I think it's about having a decent job that pays a living wage with health care and with a pension that you can retire on and having a little security in your life and having a floor under your feet. It's one thing to say, you know, hey, I'm going to go get mine. But it's another thing to say, I'm going to get mine while walking the high wire without a net. And that's what the Republicans want us to do. They want us to walk that high wire. And you know what? If you fall, tough luck, buddy. You're on your own. And I look at this health care thing. This whole health care issue, to me, is very simple. And the Republicans keep throwing out platitudes. Oh, we're going to repeal the socialistic, job-killing Obamacare. What are you going to replace it with? We're going to replace it with common sense. Yeah, common sense always paid the bills. Uh-huh. I'm sure when I go to the hospital and the hospital goes, your insurance card, please. Oh, I don't have that, but I've got common sense. Do you take that? Is that like legal tender? Our problem in this country is very simple, though. And we've talked about it in the past. Our problem is we insure old people with Medicare. We insure poor people with Medicaid. We insure sick people with Medicare or Medicaid, depending on their situation. We have this patchwork. We've got children that we cover with the CHIP program, the Children's Health Insurance Program. So what we've done, and I love this bizarre thought that we want to keep government out of our health care. Government has always been in it. In fact, back before government was an evil word, back before the corporate the form paid a bunch of mouthpieces to bastardize the word government, government actually worked for the people. You know, in the clip we heard earlier in the program with Kennedy, spent half to two-thirds of the costs of building a hospital. That spending came from the federal government. As we moved into the 60s and 70s, that went up because we saw the value in it. We the community, we the people. But then Reagan came along and said, oh, you know what? Let's privatize that. There's profit to be made there. So we've got this bizarre patchwork going on where the sickest, most costly people are taken out of the insurance pool. And what you have is you have insurance companies, for-profit seeking entities, looking for the cream of the crop. Saying, oh, we'll take you, we'll take you. Oh, sorry. We're going to charge you three times or four times as much, so you're uninsurable. And they get to pick the most profitable. They get to pick the young people. The old people are all off. We, the people, have taken on the risk of all the old folks, the folks who are going to need health care, and we should because it's right. But, and this is my problem, just like my racist friend who thinks that at every turn there's a black man taking a job from him because of affirmative action, yet he can never point one out. I do agree that there's some problems with this. I look at this with Medicare and Medicaid as non-racial affirmative action. We're putting a class of people ahead of another class. We're saying that the old people who get Medicare, you're more important than a 45-year-old father of three. We're saying to children who their parents can't afford health care, they're more important than their parents because we're covering children. We're not covering their parents. To me, if you want to repeal Obama's health care bill, if you want to repeal the Democratic bill that Republicans fully had the opportunity to partake in, then you need to also go after Medicare, Medicaid, and all of the patchworks. Because I got to be honest, I'm tired of guaranteeing the corporate special interest profits. Tired of that. And I'm tired of having a protected class. If we're not all protected, then I don't think any of us should be protected. If you want to live and die by the sword, let's live and die by the sword. But this cutting people out and pitting people against each other, for me, seems like a bad idea, Jake.
That's why Medicare for All makes perfect sense. It just makes perfect sense. And you're right, this nonsense that the Republicans keep talking about of government-run health care is just crazy. And you had a few Democrats that really lost it. I mean, they were yelling in the well of Congress, look, government-run health care, it's just a lie. It's not there. In fact, one congressman accused in this issue, I don't know that it was intelligent, but he accused him of being, you know, doing the same thing that Mr. Goebbels did when he was head of the Nazi propaganda machine. I don't know if that's the right comparison, but there are some comparisons. If you say, if you say something that isn't true loud enough and long enough, people will believe it. And people do believe it.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I had this interesting, I'm not even going to say it was interesting. It was really just bizarre. I had this really, I stopped for breakfast this morning. And when I'm by myself, I usually sit at the counter, talk to the waitresses or, whatever. I'll talk to whoever's there. And the healthcare thing came up. And this guy that was sitting next to me was all a Twitter. All happy as could be that, well, we killed the socialist Obama communist fascist healthcare bill. And he went on to use this really interesting scenario, this analogy that he came up with. And I think maybe he came up with it. I don't know. Maybe not. He was talking about me and others who believe in this bill as we're cows. And we're being herded like cows by the rancher, and they're herding us, and they're moving us towards the slaughter because, people like me think that, we have a herd mentality. That we think that somehow being a community, being a collective makes us stronger than being a whole bunch of individuals. And to him that was a bad thing. And I can't get my head around exactly what he was talking about, other than he was spewing something that made the individual sacrosanct, that it was the individual above all. And on some things, again, we've talked, my libertarian streak says, yeah, as an individual, there are some things I think I should be doing. But I do understand that as a community, in a democracy, we have the ability to come together and do things for everyone as a collective. And, it was just the weirdest. And if anybody has any idea what this guy was talking about, I would love to know. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Because it sounds like someone had given him kind of a lecture, and he picked bits and pieces out of it. But it was definitely this idea that we were all being herded by the liberal elites.
Isn't that, again, part of the heightened self-interest, just this radical self-interest, along with the concept that, well, if you band together, that somehow that's a communist, socialist concept.
But they want us to join the military. They want us, when the flag is waved, to come together. They want us to, do all these things. They want us to go to churches. It makes no sense. And, when I would bring that up, well, that's different. How's it different? It's still people coming together. And he would go back to his talking points. Cow, just like a cow being herded. We put fences around cows. And I'm going, yeah, because they're valuable. You don't want them to get out. If you're talking about a ranch scenario, I get that. But, he just, it was this weird kind of bizarre discussion that made me, I left more confused than when I sat down to talk to him. And to me, there's this, I would love to read whatever it is where he got this from. Because, a lot of people use these analogies. And you've heard it, are you the cowboy type or the astronaut type? The cowboy type is the guy who, he wants to be out there on his own. He's going to use things up and discard things. He's not going to be part of a community. The astronaut, of course, lives in a confined space, understands that his world is finite and has to, work with others. There's a whole rap that goes with each of those. But I'm not getting the herd and the rancher. It's kind of putting both of those analogies together and somehow trying to make it sound bad.
I know what you mean, Rick. I've talked to people like that. They don't necessarily use that same scenario, but they come up with these. What they basically are is talking points, and they hide behind them, and they don't deviate from them. And you could have stood. I know these kind of people. You could have stood there for 4 hours and made eloquent after eloquent after eloquent argument and talking points, and it wouldn't have made a difference. In their own minds.
I try not to use talking points. I really tried to understand.
Not talking points, but points of argument.
I really wanted to understand what the hell he was talking about. But he just, it was just like,
He's made up his, it sounds like he's made up his mind that this healthcare reform bill is a threat to his liberties. Somehow, and the right wing, some of them are. They have done that. They just, well, you know, they're some of the right wing thinks that you want to go as far away from government as you can.
Well, let me leave you with the punchline now, since you hit that point. He is a 66-year-old man on Medicare. We're right back.
Which
after
makes
this.
It even more mysterious.
Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
Chances are that an art museum, symphony hall, university building, or other public edifice in your area is emblazoned with the name of some prominent rich man. His name is up there in shiny brass, we're told, because he's a model citizen for all to emulate. Of course, we know that his name is there only because he's richer than Zeus and gave a bale of money to get the institution to immortalize him in brick and brass. And don't even ask what he did to get so rich. The real model citizens, in my view, are not those who are publicly glorified, but regular folks across our land who rise up against greed and injustice, usually fighting with no public acclaim. Ironically, they're often battling injustices perpetrated by the very same rich men whose names are so garishly splashed across our public buildings. Sadly, we recently lost one model citizen with the death of Judy Bonds, a wonderfully spirited woman from Marfork Holler down in the coal fields of West Virginia. Forced out of her ancestral home a decade ago by the profiteering barons of mountaintop strip mining, Judy became the barons' worst nightmare, an enraged, fearless, knowledgeable, determined, and eloquent grassroots activist. From the hollers of Appalachia to the halls of Congress, from town meetings to university lecture halls, this tireless champion of environmental justice took Appalachia's dirty secret, the grotesque destruction that coal company greed is wreaking on the mountains, streams, and people there, into the national spotlight. Passionate, funny, and inspiring, Bonds was known as the Hillbilly Moses, rallying local coalitions to battle the greed and galvanizing a national movement to stop the ravages of mountaintop removal. This is Jim Hightower saying, Judy's gone, but her spirit lives on in the movement that she built. To connect with it, go to Coal River Mountain Watch at crmw.net.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.com.
Your working class radio experience. Where hard work, common sense, and rational thoughts are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
Working hard to make a left. Reach out from the red. For the sun, let the candy on. Blue dental, head is fake.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of the program this evening, right there at thericksmithshow.com, you can download our podcast. You can watch the video. Lots of things there to say, see, and do. You can also email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. I do appreciate the emails and answer them all personally. AT&T, I guess, is asking the Supreme Court to recognize its personal privacy. Are you getting this? AT&T, respect our privacy. This is another in a long line of legal concepts known as corporate personhood that's going to give corporations the ability to be one of us. I want to be a real boy, said the corporation. But what they've got is they've got lots of money. And it's going to be interesting to see where this Supreme Court, who generally has been very willing to hand out corporate personhood status, where they're going to go with this. So it will be interesting in the coming weeks to see where we're going to get, where we go with this. Justice Elaine Kagan has recused herself from this because she was involved in it. So we'll see what happens. It could end up in a 4-4 split. I doubt it. I'm thinking it's going to be a 5-3 5-3 decision. The same five that voted for Citizens United voting for this as well. In Long Island, this Republican who is considered a mega donor, he's one of these hedge fund guys, got boatloads of cash. He gave more than $100,000 in the 2010 election cycle to people like Michelle Bachmann. Turns out that he's the guy who funded the anti-Ground Zero mosque thing, spent a couple million dollars funding all that outrage. And remember what we said when it was going on? There's somebody behind this? Well, now we know who it is. It's a guy named Robert Mercer. He's a big, big GOP funder, but more than anything, he's a big bomb thrower. And one of these guys who doesn't want to be known. One of these guys who hides behind the big think tanks and hides behind these front groups. But interestingly enough, he gave a couple million dollars to people like that woman who did the blog, who is against the mosque on Ground Zero. That's not really on Ground Zero. In favor of a Walmart there, though. So kind of interesting. Kind of interesting where her allegiance lies. Amazing stuff. Also, Senator Al Franken, not happy about the Comcast deal. He's basically saying that Comcast is going to whack Netflix. And if you remember a story not too long ago, Comcast tripled the rates that they charge Netflix to get their movies out. And I think it's funny because now the deal with Comcast and NBC Universal are going to go through. So if a corporation wants to be a person and they kill another corporation, is that still murder? So if Comcast kills Netflix, if they whack them like those like the folks in New York who've just been arrested, do they go to jail? Oh, I forgot. No, they're not people. They can't put them in prison. So it'll be interesting to see where that ends up taking us. But this whole consolidation thing is just, in my mind, horrible. The fact that they've allowed this to go through the FCC has said, yeah, go ahead, consolidate. We want one less hand in the media. That's, to me, just dangerous. And now that Comcast, a vehemently anti-union company, now that they're controlling a larger portion, I think it's going to get much, much worse and fast. But, hey, good for us. Yay! Good for us. We now have an FCC. It's a god. Yeah, go ahead.
They certainly have.
I hit the wrong button. I was supposed to do my applause.
There we
go. No, I mean, when you look at this whole FCC decision, the fact that they're going to let them move forward, to me, it's a bad idea.
They certainly had a friend in Pennsylvania. Governor Rendell, he was very good to them.
They were good to him.
They were good to him, exactly. Yeah. Gee, I'm shocked. I'm shocked.
According to Politico, top staff members for key Congress people, mostly Republicans, or actually all Republicans, met behind closed doors on Tuesday with energy lobbyists. Oh, big surprise there. To, quote, work on strategy to handcuff the Obama administration's climate change agenda. They said, we told them, we don't need your help to get this done, said a Republican. And when we walked away from the meeting, that feeling was, we got that. We got it. So basically, they're going to, again, be in unison against any sane, rational energy policy, any cap and trade. I'm not a fan of cap and trade, to be honest with you, but they're going to be in unison. Against it. So maybe, you know, the recalcitrant Republicans are still here, so it should be fun to watch. Fun to watch. And I know you're chomping at the bit, and someone passed recently that I know you're, you look up to.
Absolutely. You were a little bit young. Probably weren't born when he was a famous man in political lore, Sergeant Schreiber. He married, Eunice Kennedy Shriver, which was John Kennedy's sister. He was appointed by John Kennedy, head of the Peace Corps in the 60s. after he was assassinated and President Johnson became the president. President Johnson decided to do something about poverty, and he started the War on Poverty program. He asked, amazingly, while he was head of the Peace Corps, he asked Chardon Schreiber to also head up the War on Poverty program. Did a fantastic job. Fast forward to 1972, he ran for vice president with George McGovern. I mean, they got killed by Mr. Nixon in that election, which centered around the war. If you remember, George McGovern was the big anti-war candidate.
They got killed?
They got beat soundly. They got beat. I guess today you got to watch the wordage.
Well, no, I thought he just died.
No, he got killed in the election, meaning, you know, for president.
Right.
Not literally. You know, by all accounts, he was a very magnanimous man. If you wouldn't have known who he was, you probably wouldn't have. By that I mean he never asked for any recognition. He just did what he thought was right. If today, Rick, I got to tell you, seriously, if only this country had more people like Sergeant Schreiber, who gave so much to this country and made a total difference. I mean, think of the goodwill that the United States got from the Peace Corps, sending young, idealistic people. Many people involved in politics today started. That's how they started. They got involved in the Peace Corps, and they got involved in, you know, our relationships with other countries. And today, they're better people before it. And you know, God rest his soul. I tip my hat to him, and it was a shame. He was 92 years old, lived a long and very fruitful life. And I acknowledge this man's greatness. It's a shame that we don't have more great men like him. He made a difference in the world, and if we could only make the difference a fractionally of what this man did, this nation would be so much better off.
Well, we rest in peace. Here recently, I guess we've lost a couple of heroes.
You absolutely have. And, you know, while we mentioned President Johnson, you know, a lot of people didn't like him. The Republicans, you know, surprise, surprise, demonized him. And if you listen to the right, they'll say, well, the War on Poverty was just throwing money down a rat hole. That's not true. War on Poverty actually
made
was
people's
a success.
Lives better.
It was a success. Yes, it was expensive, but our poverty in the 60s was great.
I look at myself.
And you have to understand now that the black people were just, you know, the Civil Rights Act in the 60s, they were evolving, you know, not only as far as their rights, but in an economic sense. But there was an awful lot of poverty, and a lot of it was concentrated in the black neighborhoods, and he did an awful lot to help those people.
I mean, I look at some of the Great Society programs that I benefited as a kid, the school lunch programs, some of the other things that helped us. And, you know, look, if it weren't for welfare, if it weren't for some of the those programs, who knows where I would have been today. I want to thank everybody who tuned in tonight. Thank you for being here. For you folks at home, thanks. Thanks for the folks who called in. I want to thank Brett, our chief engineer, the guy who slides the sliders and turns the knobs and answers the phones. Thank you, Jake. Again, if you missed any portion of the program, thericksmithshow.com is the place where you can go download our podcast. And for you folks who listen to the podcast, thank you. We look forward to hearing from you, Rick, at thericksmithshow.com. Until tomorrow night, you have a safe one, and we'll see you right back here.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@thericksmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath.
With the memorial for Judy Bonds this past Saturday at Crooks and Liars, go and have a look. Thanks to our op-ed columnist, Reverbo. Thanks to my head writer, David, in Tennessee. Ongoing thanks to the fine, hard-working, brave people who proved it again today the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks from Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. Many thanks. And always, always, always. Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
Rick Smith is next.